Calling to order, Ms. Coronado, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Eugene Conner.
Here.
Councilmember Joan Henson.
Here.
Councilmember Shirley Dowdy.
Present.
Mayor Ronner.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Anacline.
Here.
Councilmember Douglas Dunn is excused. Councilmember Serena Sullivan.
Here.
City staff Justin Johnson, City Manager Ashley Coronado, City Clerk Sharon Bono, Finance Director Alberti Chavez, Police Chief Jack Ernest, Fire Chief Cindy Moss, Personnel Director Tom Climate, Public Works Director Peg White, Library Director.
Thank you very much. A continuation of last night's budget hearing. Item number one, presentation and discussion of the proposed tentative budget for fiscal year 2015-2016 and possible directions to staff for changes to be made prior to formal approval. We have two people signed up, and they're certainly welcome to come up and express some thoughts that they might have. We'll start off with Terry Nudy.
I just have a few things I'd like to say. What I've just passed out is a copy of an article that I took off the Cochise County website under the Sheriff's Office. It's the Sheriff Assist Team. And the reason I bring this to you is because I want you to see that I worked at the Sheriff's Office, so I was familiar with these people. The Sheriff has 24 to 36 people that work on his sheriff assist team. In 2014, they donated 10,562 hours. And what they do is stuff that frees up the professionals. Like, for instance, if I had 6 boxes of stuff that needed to be shredded, instead of me, a paid employee, standing at the shredder all day long, one of them would come in and do the shredding for me. They would take forms to the courthouse and wait for 2 hours while everything got stamped. They would, if there's a traffic accident, they're the ones that stand out there and flag people by so that the officers can do the real work, okay? And they're very proud to be part of the sheriff assisting. And I thought of them last night when you were talking about furloughs. If we have to go to a point of furlough, it would be wonderful to have a BSBY assist team. That could come in on those Fridays and Mondays and maybe answer the phone, you know, or take bills or those kind of things. There's a lot of professionals in this area that are retired that might be willing to donate, you know, 2 hours a week, 10 hours a week, who knows, unless you ask. But it could be a very positive thing and get people involved in city business. And I really want to commend Mr. Johnson for putting together a program that invited people in to take classes about the government and find out what's going on so you can see where you can help. We're quickly coming to a point where we can't buy our way out anymore. We're going to have to do it ourselves. We're going to have to, you know, pick up the shovel, so to speak. So this is just something that I wanted to bring to your attention. Another point on here would be we have a BSBY Honor Society, and these kids over there have to do special projects. Wouldn't it be wonderful to assign them the project of going and watching the streetlights in the day and in the night to see which ones need to be turned off? That could be a whole project. It could also apply to the Boy Scouts. The Eagles have to do projects. So those are just some ideas I wanted to present to you, but I have a few more comments. I think that Mr. Johnson was very correct last night when he stated that we as BSBY City are way too isolated. We need to be collaborating with other entities because they have solutions we don't have and haven't thought of, and we're not alone in this. A lot of people are going through it. I would really highly recommend, if you have opportunity, Mr. Johnson, to go and talk to Mike Ortega, who's just about retired. I don't know if you've spoken with him yet, but you got to give that man credit. We are the only county in Cochise that didn't lay off anybody, and we didn't have furlough days. And it wasn't easy, but the man pulled it off, and he deserves a lot of credit. And so he may have some wonderful advice. It's just a suggestion. Last night it was suggested that we give $10,000 to a group to come in and see about doing businesses here in the city. And I just have to say, there's no magic bullets. Nobody is going to come in here and save us but ourselves. It's kind of like the lottery mailings that I get. Send us $1,000 because you have won $10 million. Well, then why do I have to send you $1,000? It didn't make sense to me. And so I wanted to bring that up. It's, you know, these are things that we can solve ourselves. I mean, look for yourself. Go to Safeway. That's where we get a lot of business, from Mexico. You see all kinds of cars from Mexico there. And what I think we ought to be doing is finding somebody who's interested in picking up Alco and turning it into a mini mall where they have sandwich shops and ice cream stores, so that when people come shopping, they have some place to grab something quick to eat and interesting things to look at. I personally spoke with the owner of Subway in Sierra Vista, who had come over here that very day to look at opening a Subway shop here in Bisbee. He didn't, and I'm not going to tell you why. What I'm going to tell you is that why don't you assign, sorry, Mr. Johnson, to call him up and ask him why he didn't come. And the point that I bring out is he didn't come over here and ask for feasibility studies. It's his money. He did his own checking things out. He looked to see if this was a good place to be. And he didn't come over here for free dinners. We didn't have to take him out or wine and dining. He just saw an opportunity, came over here, checked it out for the community, but he made a personal business decision. What that is, we need to find out, because that's a viable business that we lost here in Bisbee. One more point I wanted to bring up, and that is that I've been hearing this, we need to rebrand ourselves. We don't need to rebrand ourselves. We are unique, and we need to take advantage of that. Being different, not weird. I mean, I've heard that too. We don't need to be the weird city. But we shouldn't throw out our heritage, and we shouldn't throw out our history to be like everybody else. Tombstone has made millions being different. We need to bring in local business leaders that work here right now to see how we can become more unique. We have the brains to do this, but we don't need to be giving away money to do it. There are no quick fixes, but we are smart enough to do this. Thank you very much.
Ms. Terry Nudy, thank you. Next we have Ms. Susan Blackford.
Adjust these now. Okay. First, I would like to thank the city manager for his honesty about the city budget. I would like to thank Sharon and the city clerks for their hard work on this budget. It is not easy to hear, but the only way to fix a problem is to understand it. I wish council would acknowledge the loss of $159,000 due to the loss of the sales tax from putting in the bag ban. Their decision on a false narrative hurt this town. It would be nice for the council to welcome back shoppers to this town on July 4th when the ban is lifted. Just a few ideas. Have the mayor and council give back some of their pay. Also have the city manager give back some of his pay. You cannot ask employees to give and not participate yourself. That's not right. Let the town know what our problems are and explain to them how we can all solve it together. I agree with Terry. Ask for a volunteer committee made up of retired citizens that can offer services to the city. I know we can't be involved in finance or police or fire, But like Terry says, if we could help put up notices, or we could relieve if the employees need some help, there's a lot of us out there that can maybe give 2 days a week. It doesn't have to be a large amount, but with everybody working together, something wonderful could be done. We need to generate income, and the best way I can see is to buy 2 ambulances. I was just thinking about 1, but after last night, I think we need to 2 and hire more paramedics to operate them, and do not use Arizona Ambulance anymore. If I understand the statement provided by the city manager, it looks like we lost in 2 years 400 trips to giving 400 trips to Arizona Ambulance. That is a profit of $900 per ship, as told to us by Councilman Dowdy, and that I think I figured out was $360,000 of lost income. We are a population that is getting older and need good ambulance service provided by our own fire department. Stop talking about a volunteer fire department. That will not work at all. You have to spend money to make money. Stop spending our tax dollars on issues like the feasible study done with the hospital that went nowhere. We do not need to add $10,000 for the iBisbee committee. The last 8K did not work out well for the city at all. Let me tell you how to get business here. Being a realtor for 23 years here and in Tucson, I dealt with businesses and commercial buildings. I was on the Downtown Business Association in Tucson. I was a realtor to the mayor of Tucson on the Historic Commission. Genuine business, like Terry said, will look over a community before they come to look at it. They will pay their own way and do not have to be bribed to come here. We need to get our town back in working order. We do not need to sell our assets like parcels of land, or better yet, as the iBisbee committee suggests, we give them away for free. Stop making decisions that drive businesses away. I know we lost big buyers after they were driving around and seeing the condition of this town. The charm of old Bisbee does not sell to everyone. It is the job of this council to run this town in good order and provide for the health and safety of its citizens. We have a very, very good city manager who is honest and working very, very hard. Work with him on positive programs. This will get people to move here again, and then business will follow as more of the population grows. Not spending $10K that we do not have is just a waste of money as before. If you want to spend that money, use it to fix the Mule Gulch ditch or fix the San Jose Wharf that needs repair. That will benefit the citizens. Ask the citizens on what services that they would like improvement on now that we are working on the streets. Thanks to the city manager and public works department and director for the purchase of the road equipment. That was a responsible use of the 1% tax increase. That is what this town is asking you to do. Good action over wasteful spending. We have great city heads of departments, and you asked them to tighten their belts. They did. It is unthinkable then to turn around and waste any of the taxpayer money. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Susan Blackford. We will now continue the budget hearing, and may I refer to Mr. Justin Johnson and or Ms. Sharon Blum.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. The rest of the slides that we'll go through should go relatively quickly. You won't see any significant changes, and we can really get to any substantive discussions that you all want to have. And I did also want to mention, last night we did have some conversation about the transfer of the $300K from the general fund to wastewater. Just won't let you know if you haven't had an opportunity. I did send the ordinance as well as the ballot language to your emails today just for reference, so that you have a much better idea as to why that's something that we have to do. So, all right. So where we are, government grants. Here you'll see No significant change aside from the fact that in the first top line in Grant's Bakerville flood study that's completed. This year we're looking to do the work here on the 10-town paving improvement phase one. Last year we budgeted 190. This year we're looking to budget 203,000. Let's drop down to public safety fire grants. As was the case last year, hopefully we will be awarded a FEMA grant. And so those, in total, we're looking at a budget of 425,000, same as last year. We drop down to transportation grants FY 2016. Looking at a budget of 450,000, and what you'll see, you have the airport entitlement grant. And so the question was raised yesterday about the 35,000. We're transferring the 35K transfer from airport to this particular line item, and that 35,000 is seed money to go towards any type of airport improvements that you all will approve. All right, next slide, please. Rico. All right, Rico. As was the case last year, we budgeted 101,000. This year, we're proposing the same. Hopefully, we will have an auction here in the next month and a half or so. Is what we're hoping for. So we'll see some hopefully see some funds coming in from a Rico auction.
Can I ask a question?
Councilmember Klein.
Mr. Johnson, do we have any idea when we might be getting our portion of the big seizure that we had not too long ago?
Regarding the tunnel. I'll refer to the chief on that one.
Mayor, council, staff. In regards to the seizure, when you hear in the news that there's millions of dollars recovered in a drug seizure, that's referring to the street value of that particular item seized. So the value per se in those types of seizures as far as monetary comes from the vehicles that were taken, seizure of property. There were several vehicles parked on the property involved in that incident, and they were filed on. It'll be up to the county attorney in hearings, the specific owners coming forward, and they have a right to due process for that. So the Rico side of things, this part of it is new to me, so I'm kind of learning as I go as well, but I know that it is a lengthy process. Several vehicles have been returned. They were, upon further investigation, learned were not specifically involved with the tunnel itself, and so we were mandated by the courts to return those vehicles to the proper owners. We do expect to see a few vehicles forfeited in that process, but that will, once we have those vehicles forfeited, then it'll be up to the county attorney to schedule a Rico auction, because we work on their schedule. They will do that. So I don't think that they will be seized in time for this next Rico auction. That probably won't be for the following one, which would be sometime more likely in fiscal or in 2016.
Is that one other quick question? Is Rico funds, Rico availability of funds going down or going up? In other words, are we getting more or less property right now? What's going on? I've been out of the loop for a while.
I'd say it's much lower now than it ever was before. In the past, we had the ability to purchase vehicles on a regular basis, and we don't have those type of funds now. Our accounts, in comparison to those days, are significantly less. There is a little bit of money there, but it's not much.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
All right. Bisbee Arts. Here you'll see last year we budgeted $39,000. This year we're budgeting $20,000. You see a reduction because the BAC has been very active and forward thinking as it relates to some of the grants programs that they offer. So they've been very active, and I certainly want to commend Ms. Williams, who I thought was here. Good deal. Donations, we've budgeted, last year we budgeted $1,017,000. This year we're budgeting $1,027,000. One of the key, and for the most part these are all placeholders, in the event that we are awarded some sort of donation or grant. In this case, one thing I really want to point out again, and we talked about it very briefly, the AZCOM Foundation, Shelter Medical, Arizona Community Foundation, that was a grant we received, the amount of $10,000. And so and the beauty of it is all the spay and neuters, we've not had to pay anything out of the general fund that's being covered. So certainly want to commend Sharon for doing a heck of a job in receiving that particular grant. All right, next slide, please. Airport, excuse me. Last year we budgeted $41,660. This year we're budgeting $76,660. And again, that increase is related to the transfer from the general fund to do some sort of activity, hopefully this year. Police special revenue, $816,561. This year we're budgeting $146,361. The service, and Sharon, you're going to help me with this one, the service reimbursement, a reduction of $739.
Yes, that is. This is Stone Garden. This is where the Stone Garden funds come through. So the service reimbursement is for the overtime that is submitted for reimbursement that goes back to the general fund, I believe. Yeah, you'll see it in the bottom expenditure there, transfers to the general fund. So that's the portion to offset with the general fund. They pay us for benefits and we call them EREs, mileage, and that's how we transfer that back to the general fund.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. Next slide, wastewater. Here you'll see last year we budgeted $3,357,390. This year we're budgeting $3,000,000, on the revenue side, $3,025,620. Total budget, to include personnel, $561,088 in FY15. This year we're budgeting $505,208, in part associated with freezing positions and some of the other efficiencies in other areas that have been identified. Next slide. Total expenses in wastewater. FY2015 total budget, $3,357,390. This year we're proposing $3,025,620, a reduction of $331,770.
Councilmember Connors.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate it. The transfer to administration and city manager and finance and legal and public works and garage, I understand the necessity of having, it's nice to have that revenue stream. And I don't need, I just want to express that it would be great to see those transfers, just those transfers, diminish as Terry Newty talked about, as best we can in the manner in which we're doing it. All, we're whittling it down. It's come this moment of clarity. Whatever money that we could not transfer and leave in wastewater for the maintenance of their pumps and their, and all that stuff, I would love to see, and it's happening, I'm seeing it happen by us doing what we're doing right now, and that is just something I'd like to see on a nice shiny day when everything, the right amount of rain and everything's perfect and, we're not too weird or we're just funky enough, that's what I would love to see wastewater, that money that we have coming through there, that revenue stream, to see if we can just try to keep as much as we can with them.
I'd just like to respond just a little bit to the transfers. When you look at that from the enterprise funds, because not only this is the first time you see it in this budget here, but transfers come from sanitation. They also come from Green Mine. Those transfers go back into the general fund. The
administration, this is their administrative overhead. This is what the general fund budget is charging them because we do their billing, we do their financial reporting, we do all of that. As you see, Queen Mine, these are actually formulas that we have. We have a transfer worksheet that I go over with Mr. Johnson when we review it every year. It's adjusted appropriately. One of the things that you'll see when we get to Queen Mine is increased legal costs. You know, if they're using the attorneys more, then that enterprise fund needs to pay for those services. So this isn't an arbitrary number that we just pull out. We go down and look at it, but that's what it is. It's their overhead.
Services rendered?
Right, it's like billing and collecting their money and doing their deposits and reporting all of this. There's a lot of financial reporting that goes on with wastewater. We do quarterly reports, daily reports, requests for information constantly. Okay. That's where a lot of the public works gets their grants. There's a lot of financial reporting requirements for that, along with all of their audits. You know, if they were an enterprise fund, it's supposed to support itself based on its fees. So you're also seeing on the other side of that is that 1% transfer in from the general fund. So, you know, we can look at that. But I don't know that you guys ever been really explained on how all that works. But that's how the calculations come forward.
The Public Works Director, Mr. Tom Klimak, has a few comments.
Thank you, Mayor, City Council. You know, when I first saw that some years ago and I presented our finance numbers and audits to USDA Rural Development, you know, they basically said to me, geez, Tom, you got a lot of nerve coming here asking for money when you're transferring money out of the wastewater fund. And, you know, I'll be honest with you, I was kind of shocked. You know, I thought, oh, boy, you know, I guess I better leave right now. But then as I thought about it and we discussed it with the USDA Rural Development, the very same thing. When you start to look at the administrative overhead that's directly related to wastewater, it just encompasses a whole lot of people. Let me just give you an example. We're working with Sharon right now with our wastewater collections people. There's myself and, of course, the property owner up on OK Street just to install a shutoff valve. So it sounds like a very simple thing, but yet it's very complicated. You know, we're at the point where we're going to develop an invoice for them so that they can invoice their partners so that they're willing to pay the $225 that it takes to install the shutoff valve. They've opted to do it themselves, okay, so they're going to save... You know, they'll save about $300-$400 by doing that because our fee is like $500 to do it. So each instance that each time that we're confronted with an issue in wastewater, it really requires the whole group of us. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. And then if there's a legal issue involved, then there's your city attorney. So everybody that when you see in these transfers, not all the cities do it. Cities that are appropriately funded and have a lot of dollars, you know, they draw it right from the general fund and they don't think twice about it, like Pima County Wastewater or any of those large agencies. But like in our case, everything that we touch involves a lot of people. So I just wanted to point that out because I used to get, you know, really excited about it, and I think I even went a couple rounds with Sharon on this a couple of years ago, and I said, boy, you know, you guys are taking our money. But the reality is that we're all in it together, and we all have to make it work. So I've kind of sort of gone full circle on it and convinced myself that it's appropriate.
Mayor? Our council member comments?
You persuaded me, Tom. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. sounds good.
Council member Hansen?
I'm just a little confused on one line. There's a reserve accumulation of $559,728. What is that?
That is the fund balance that will grow. This is a balanced budget. We're not balancing this budget with reserves. This is a balanced budget.
Right.
This is the overage. In other words, our income, projected income, is exceeding our expenses. So this is a wonderful thing.
Yes.
And one of the things that I want to look at, we're going to bring Mr. Klemick back up here because I need him to talk about it. But I'd like you to look at the last line, transfer to public work grants. That's on that. Last year, it was budgeted at $860,000. Now, these are projects that Mr. Klemick has budgeted for. And anything that has to do with the sewer comes out of the sewer fund. So last year when he was building his list of projects and what he thought he was going to work on, he thought he would need $860,000 from this fund to do those wastewater upgrades, whatever projects he's working on. You're going to see it next. I have him here. This year when he did the budget, he has been very wonderful with getting free money grants that he didn't schedule any of this money to come from the sewer plant. And when we get to Fund 57, which is the public works, we'll talk about that some more. But this is what he's working on for this year. That doesn't mean next year he's not going to need to budget more. This money is like, these funds are like the grant matches that we have to have. When he gets his, he's really good at getting free money for us. So I wanted him to be available because that sticks out like a sore thumb, but the reverse reserve accumulation, I didn't know what to do with it. I hadn't budgeted one that was balanced and the expenses were less than the income. So I'm very happy about that. So I don't know if you want to elaborate or you want to wait till we get to 57 because I think Fund 57 is next.
Okay. I can stand here and wait.
Can we skip and then go back to sanitation? Yeah. Why don't we do that since I have
you
it
want to
up
san-
in front?
You want to do sanitation?
Okay, here it all goes. Okay?
All right, sanitation.
Let's skip that. Let's go to 57.
Okay.
We'll go back to
57. We'll go on to 57?
Yes. Only because he's there. This is how this all feeds into the sewer. That's how come I want you guys to see this.
Okay,
you got the right one. And this is where Mr. Klemick budgeted that $860,000 less.
Can you see it, Don? All right. Do you have a slide?
Do you have it or do you need me? I can. Let me help you.
It's the colored sheet.
It's the colored one. There's two colored ones. One at the very back.
All right.
Yeah. Well, I haven't given Mr. Klemick his book yet until it's final.
Well, let's just talk about a couple things here. We've got the ongoing project at this time. We have projects that are running parallel. The Old Bisbee Lateral project, that's being done by a consultant in Tucson. That's Westland Resources Incorporated. And what they're doing is they're looking at all the lateral sewers, the ones that cause us a lot of headaches almost on a continuous basis, up until this past year. And Dwayne's over here in the audience. He can tell you because he works on these. Year after year, we've had about 60-plus number of SSOs, sanitary sewer overflows. Okay. When I first came here, the guys were basically just rotor-rootering those lines. And it occurred to me, how long are we going to continue to do this? So one of the very first things, Mike Turan, Gaston, and I got together and I says, gee, guys, what would it take to fix these lines, okay? I mean, you're there. You're cutting the roots out. Some of these lines are actually on top of the ground or close to the top of the ground. Their response was, hey, you know, we could just fix these, but we don't have time because we're running to the next one. So we decided to slow down and do interim repairs. So what we have is we have a whole series of lateral sewers in Old Bisbee that are going up and down the hills, all over. Some of the joints are separated. Some of the pipe is deteriorated. Some it's root infested with roots as long as, I've been told 14 feet, some longer. I mean, it's unbelievable. So this project that's being partially funded right now, it's the study, it's the preliminary engineering report by Beck and the city. City has $60,000 into it in this year's budget, and Beck has given us $50,000. Beck has been very good to us. Almost year after year, we're getting $50,000, $60,000. A couple years ago, we only got like $30,000. But every bit of it helps when you're trying to build a program and help you get there to the end. So what you're seeing here in that first green line item is the Beck project, which, actually it's the old Bisbee Lateral project being partially funded. So we're expecting to have that done in August. In fact, that's where we just extended that time extension for 3 months. That's that project. So we should have that done. And then the next goal there is to use this study, okay, this preliminary engineering report, to go to the funding agencies and try to get funding for the design and then eventually the construction. Now, the grant dollars aren't as prevalent as they were 5-6 years ago, but I think we still have a good chance to get something on that project. The next one, just talking about the solar in the beige color here. You know, when we first started out, we were talking about the solar project at the wastewater plant. You know, everybody was all for it, it was all gung-ho, and I'd like to say I think it's a good project, but it's only part of the energy savings at the facility. The energy savings that we looked at was done as part of an energy audit through the Rural Communities Rural Communities Association Corporation of America, okay? And they're an agency that helps rural communities. And they did an energy audit for us, and what came out of that was solar's a good idea, revamping your pumps, redoing a lot of your diffusers and actuators and things that you got at the wastewater treatment plant. So, you know, there was a thorough analysis done for the energy at the facility. It looks to me right now, my estimate is that we're probably going to save, and I know there's a worksheet here, it says $46,000 a year. I'm saying it's about $23,000 a year savings if you don't count the APS increases on their rate increases, okay, which can vary. Now, we know those have gone up on an average of about 1.5% a year for the last 25 years because we just recently renegotiated contracts with APS that we have not done in 25 years. So, you know, that's a pretty good average, about 1.5% a year. So you take that, we're probably saving about $34,000 a year if that trend continues. If it increases, then that's even more savings. So again, it's not a panacea, but it's just one part of the energy savings at the wastewater treatment plant. So, you know, I've reported it as about $460,000 savings over 20 years. It could be as much as $660,000. The other thing about the solar that we need to keep in mind is that when you look at the bottom line, what we had to pay for it, we were just fortunate, I think, to be in the right place at the right time to do it, because that kind of opportunity no longer exists for government agencies. Moving down here a little bit on the Tintown Sewer Project, we're about 97% of the way there. The only remaining work is contractor has to haul off the asbestos cement pipe, which is our old sewer line, which is considered a hazardous waste material. We were able to work that into the Tintown project so that we wouldn't have to pay for it. That's paid for by the feds, 100%. And that material will be trucked to Florence to their waste disposal facility. So, you know, Public Works is always trying to work every angle we can to Bisbee's betterment. The other thing is we're still looking to do chip seal in Tintown. There have been some concerns raised about the possibility that we may be increasing the storm flow rates. That's a legitimate concern. I've discussed that with the county. And they're looking at the type of material that is out there right now at Tintown, because about a third of that project was essentially, we had to hammer our way and chisel our way to put that sewer line in, which means a lot of that's rock material out there. So when you start to look at the rock formations and the slopes, a lot of it is direct runoff already. So that being said, if we put chip seal on that, there's probably a very low potential of increasing flow significantly where it would be recognizable. Okay, and that's something that the county's looking at, because there are flood control administrators. They're the ones that review our flood work. Let's see, miscellaneous grants. That's, I think, Sharon, you can comment on it. That's a number that we kind of plug in there.
Right. We have a couple placeholders throughout the budget. You'll see another one. You saw one previous. And that's just in case something comes up that we can take advantage of. That's where it would be. That's where it's budgeted. That doesn't mean we're going to spend $2.5 million. As with all of this, if the money's not coming in, it's not being spent. And if you look back at the green line for the year-end estimate for 15, that's where you're seeing the transfers, Ms. Hansen, that you were talking about. You take those two green lines. He obtained funding of $50,000. Free money from the BECC. We transferred $60,000 from the sewer fund, and together that $110,000 paid for, is it the PER, Mr. Climate?
Go ahead.
It's called PER? Okay.
Yeah, you're right.
So, and that's how this all fits together, and that's how come it's color-coded. The top of it is your revenue, and the bottom of it is your expense. So what Mr. Climate budgeted for this year was no transfers from sewer, because they're working on the USDA, the $222,000, that is pure grant money, free money to us. You know, these projects are huge, but this is an awful lot of money that our Public Works Department has brought into us. One of the things with the PER that he was just talking about was, then we go on to the next stage. So he doesn't know how much funding we can get. We would transfer from the sewer fund. That's where those monies would come from. So even though we're in the black this year, next year he might put us in the red, depending on what's on the table.
Yeah, one of the things I might add, it's a real struggle trying to get these grants, because we're competing against all the other cities and towns in the state. Okay, now one of the things that, even though our PER is not completed, preliminary engineering report is not completed for the wastewater treatment plant, that some of the early signals that I'm getting is that USDA Rural Development is saying, hey, you know, we may not have enough money to fund this sewer project you want to do, the laterals, or the wastewater treatment plant. Okay, because I've already told them we're coming down the road for the next round, okay? And they're saying, okay, well, you got a preliminary engineering report in right hand, and you got one in your left hand. Okay, I hear you're coming at us with two projects. We may not be able to fund them both. So we may get caught in our own created crossfire here on chasing grant monies, because they're both almost running in parallel in terms of time. So I put that in there as an anticipated grant amount, but we may have to do some horse trading if we are thinking about how we want to do this. One of the things, my compliments go out to the wastewater staff from last, you just, actually, there was an email out last year. Our guys did such a great job at that plant, because they did what they were supposed to do last year, and that was change out actuators, change out diffusers, do the work that we can do with our own staff and our own wastewater dollars that we have available to us. So we've actually already taken a large chunk of that so-called work in front of us. We've already accomplished that. So I think we're going to have to spend a lot more time discussing that. Now is not the time. But there's a lot of issues that need to be addressed still at the plant. Some of those issues we did in tandem with the solar project. You know, people don't know this, but the solar project, actually, part of that work, we had to clean up that whole area with a we got an NOV, a notice of violation, for that whole area, because it was contaminated with all the sludge that was stored there for about 4 years. Okay, so we had to do a clean closure on that with ADEQ. So yeah, we're talking solar project, but there's all these things are intermeshing when you're on a site. And not only that, we were notified that when the plant was constructed, there was a commitment made by the city to do clean closure on the old lagoons, which we also did that at the same time. We also did an equalization basin and also did a washdown station that we still need to run the water line to. And so the idea was to try to bring this plant up to a standard that we felt felt not only good about and how it runs, but how it operates and is it user-friendly, because the money wasn't available when the project was first constructed. So I know I'm digressing, but I think it's important for people to hear the many facets of what is really going on here with these projects. They're not real straightforward. There's a lot of fish hooks in this thing that you can really get stuck on.
Thank you, Tom.
I think that's it.
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry about elaborating so much.
No, that's important.
All right.
Thank
sanitation.
You, Mr. Klimak.
All right, sanitation. No significant changes, if you will. Last year we budgeted $416,607. This year we're proposing $403,953, a slight reduction of $6,798 as a result of the health care savings. On the expense side in sanitation, $963,036 was budgeted from last year. This year we're proposing $946,486 for this year's budget.
I would like to add something for our new council members. You'll look and you'll see the reserve accumulation restricted fund. That's a percentage of the revenue received that is put in a, it's restricted for use, and this is how Public Works buys their new vehicles. This is where that money goes, 3%, and they save and they save and they save, and then they make the purchase instead of financing anything, and this is where the trucks came from. You don't see them as trucks there, but there's a pot of money that's dedicated to vehicles that it was agreed to before my time, and at the end of the year, every year, we do the calculation. We move money into the reserve fund. That's where he bought the $110,000 garbage truck from Stafford 2 years ago, and then the two trucks. So that's how that's handled in this fund.
And one thing I also wanted to point out, my apologies, line item of 4651 county tipping fees, that increase, you have an increase of 5%, a proposed increase of 5%. In conversation with the Rate Review Advisory Committee, the county is proposing increasing the tipping fee rates by 5% this year and next year and potentially significantly more in coming years. So I just wanted to point that out to let you all know that increase is likely coming, but this year does include a 5% increase for county tipping fees.
It seems like the more recycling we do, it's almost in an equation of the tipping fees going up.
That's exactly right. We have the lowest tonnage going to the county landfill, and quite frankly, we're looking at paying the highest cost. And so, if you, Andy, want to jump in here, and it's fascinating.
It's a county tipping fee, though. I mean, and all the other ones, it's going to be the same. Right,
well, right
just
now,
just the one in this.
No.
Well, it's getting really complicated. The county's in debt right now to the rural transfer stations are in debt right now, $2.1 million to Cochise County. In 3 years, are going to be $3 million in debt to Cochise County. Now, the city signed an agreement with the counties many, many years ago, not 19 years ago, I think, and we will have to pay a portion of that $3 million. But we throw away less garbage than all the other cities, any of the other cities, because we recycle more. But that ups what our per ton cost will be, because we still have to pay our share of that $3 million.
Excuse me, Mayor?
Councilmember Connors, of course.
How is that pie cut up there, Mr. Verratic?
Well, I can't tell you. Can't tell you. I think it's a good piece of pie, or the city manager thought that either, because we're basically being, in a way, you could say we're being punished because we're not throwing away as much garbage. But the problem is, we signed an agreement. It was one for all and all for one at those transfer stations, and you know, Mr. Johnson alluded to the fact that it could go up more. Well, we're looking at right now. It's going to go up to $55 a ton. Now, this has gone up every year that I've worked for the city and every year you've lived here. In 3 years, it could be $90 a ton. Maricopa pays $24.50 a ton. So we have a very, very high fee. Our stations are failing, and we just have to pay our share. I mean, there's a lot of conversation going on about this. Mr. Johnson and I have been to 3 rate review meetings. I'm a little outspoken at them for, you know, and the fact that I don't think we should be running up debt. Let's just take our pill now. I mean, look at us. And let's just pay our part. But the more we recycle, the deal is the more we can get our citizens to recycle, the more we can put back into this fund to help offset that cost. The problem is we're at a point right now where we were recycling's averaging $53 a ton. And unfortunately, right now, our tipping fee is going to go to $55. So we're starting to slide right now. Well, I was offsetting it almost evenly. It was even when I could get recycling for $53 a ton and I was only paying 53 a ton to throw it away, you were at $106 a ton net earnings and savings. Well, that equation is shifting. So it's becoming more important on our citizens that they continue to recycle. We'll never get out of paying our share. We will always have to pay our share. And the less we throw away, the higher our share becomes.
But we still
want to recycle. And, you know, we're doing something now with glass. We're taking glass to Phoenix. It's the heaviest single item in the waste stream. We're not making any money on it, but I'm saving $55 a ton. So if I take 10 tons to Phoenix, which I take almost, we're getting close to every other month now, we're saving that much money. But this is the dog wagon chasing its tail.
And realistically, the county has really come to the table and really trying to get a handle on this particular issue and has provided a multitude of options to try to help address the issues at hand. One of the ideas that was thrown out is, you know, would the cities be willing to take on the responsibility of managing your own transfer station? Well, Andy and I felt like, okay. Because we really do feel as though the caliber staff that we have, as well as, you know, the forward-thinking approach as it relates to our recycling program, we really do feel as though that it could possibly be an opportunity. Now, granted, it's not any time in the near future, but it's just an idea that has been thrown out. And so one of the things that Andy has been very good about and Alex and his crews are very good about, it's really interesting. Alex... had a conversation with one of our businesses here, and there's an idea of, hey, look, do you want our glass? And like, no, we, but the mindset has shifted, even with our recycling guys, and recognizing not only is it a revenue source, the more our community recycles, but they're thinking of themselves as, hey, look, I'm like, hey, guys, think of yourselves not just as, hey, I work in the recycling department. Think of yourselves as business developers. The more you recycle, the more it benefits us financially, and the amount of money that we're having to pay in tipping fees or the decrease significantly benefits us. So I just want to let you, that'll be coming down the pipe as soon as there's more clarity as it relates to the direction that is being proposed. So I certainly wanted to just take a very brief moment to bring that to you all's attention.
Mr. Johnson, could I speak to him about the $500,000 that Beck is proposing?
Please.
To
Andy Heretic once again.
Thank you. Beck, as you know, works on projects on the border between Mexico and the American side. They've never done a recycling project. They are offering, and we're the number one person in line for this. They would like to do a recycling facility. We are working with state contracting right now. They're offering for this building $500,000. To build a building that's built out of recycled material, insulation, water harvesting, recycled metal, the flooring, anything they can get into this to be a model for Beck in recycling. They've never done a recycling project, so we're working with them. I don't know if we'll get it this year, but they keep putting this grant off and putting us up front and working with us so that we can, because our recycling project has been very good here in the city. So we have a chance here within the next year, 18 months, to get a new $500,000 building. That's no matching money. That's $500,000. That's $500,000 of money just coming to us because of what we've accomplished in recycling. So we're looking at that, and maybe that will become our transfer station. Mr. Johnson brings up taking over the transfer station. Every citizen in this room, every person in this room, you have complete control of your waste stream. You decide every day what you're going to put for compost, what you're going to put in recycling, and what you're going to throw away. And once we take control of that, now we have the ability to pull out all the construction material, all the metal. Once I get my hands on that waste stream, then we'll determine how much we have to have to throw away. But you're giving me your trash that you're not taking care of. Many people are, but once I get a hold of that, then we can be in control of that waste stream. So that's what we're working on right now.
Thank you,
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. All right, so let's jump over to Clean Mind. Last year, in the Clean Mind budget, we budgeted in total revenues $903,856. This year, we're proposing $962,760, a difference of or an increase of $58,864. I mean, it's quite possible that we'd see that number increase a bit with the installation of the fan provided to us by Freeport. The goal with that fan being able to pump additional fresh air, they'll allow us to increase the number of tours we're able to provide to the community. And obviously, there's money that's made on the tours, but the big money is on the gift shop side. So we certainly want to attract and bring folks into the mine and buying stuff for Christmas, if from time to time. On the personnel costs, last year we budgeted $379,334. This year we're proposing a budget of $400,143 to reflect that increase in the number of tours that we'd like to provide to folks visiting our community. Also in Queen Mine, FY15 on the expense side, $903,856 is budgeted in 2015. On the for 2016, we're proposing $962,720, an increase of about $58,864,000. One of the big ticket items there you'll see in merchandise. Doug has quite the business acumen skills as it relates to his skill set is amazing, and Sharon had an opportunity to spend some time with him at this year's Gem and Mineral Show to see him in action. And he's a completely different guy, and it's pretty fascinating to watch. So the increase in the merchandising acquisitions will absolutely add additional funds to city coffers. All right, next slide, please.
I'd like to point out one thing really quick because you don't see it here. Is the transfers to the transient room tax, I'm going to change the name of that account. That's to visitor center. So we need to understand when we looked at the visitor center that, the Queen Mine supports our visitor center in many, many ways, not only by housing them, we've reduced all the costs there, but also they're actually funding and they get the secondary benefit for a lot of the things that the Queen Mine does when they buy their signs and things like that, without additional cost to the visitor center.
All right, thank you. Our next slide, miscellaneous grants. Again, most of these are all our placeholders in the event that we have an opportunity to be awarded some grants. So last year we budgeted $5,140,000. This year we're proposing $5,015,000. On the revenue side and the expenses, it's the same thing, $5,140,000. And this year we're proposing the same dollar amount as last year, $5,015,000. Our next slide, debt service.
We don't have it on the same slide.
Okay. All right, total debt service revenue, $84,642 was budgeted last year. This year we're proposing $68,789. As you see on the on the line item side, they're all transfers from the general fund and transfers from sanitation. As I mentioned last night, our debt service payments primarily for one ambulance, two Tahoes, and the police department. And if council approves in the next month or so or whatever time frame, the acquisition of a new ambulance, that certainly will come or be applied to this particular expense category. Drop down total debt service expenses for FY15, $84,642. FY2016, proposing $68,789. Wastewater treatment plant, Debt service, last year we proposed our budget $1,214.83. This year we're proposing $1,281,413, difference of $66,600. And as we talk, speak to the expenses, same thing, $1,214,000 in 2015, and this year, $1,281,413.
On that particular item, about approximately, how much do we still owe? Is it around $11 million on that? The ballpark figures, okay.
Mayor, if we can, let's research the number, because I don't want to throw the wrong number out, and then we'll certainly get a more accurate number.
I recently provided those numbers, and it's just not coming right to the top of my head, so I'd hate to be a million off, I'm sorry, sir.
I'm usually that much off when I talk about it.
I'm ready for the next one.
All right, next
it's
slide.
A significant amount, but the wastewater project was a much needed program that was instituted about 11 years ago, I believe.
Certainly. All right.
I'm on the next slide.
Okay. All right. So, new youth fund. This is just for discussion purposes here. Total revenue and expenses both. Last year proposed or budgeted $14,000. This year, FY 2016 budget $55,000. We had a discussion a couple of weeks ago about some of the things that needed to happen at the pool, a number of ADA compliance issues. Quite frankly, the pump room in and of itself, and I've spent a number of days in the pump room over the course of the summer, and quite frankly, there's a significant amount of work that needs to happen with our pool to really make it that much more an efficient operation. ADA compliance issues, we need to reseal the inside of the pool, the solar panels, the tube associated with the solar panels occasionally will dislodge, and so you have water leaking, so there's a significant amount of work. I know at one of our more recent council meetings, we discussed some of the improvements that needs to happen, like the chair, and so we proposed taking that out of the youth fund. The thought had a lot to do with the fact that it benefits many of the children in our community, and quite frankly, is a much-needed asset, one of the few things that we have, and so hopefully we can continue to make the necessary improvements. And I must publicly acknowledge Carl Hooper, our health inspector. He has worked with us diligently every step of the way this summer, he's been a blessing to us in making sure that we are aware of resources, the needs, for the pool, so I really want to publicly acknowledge him, but quite frankly, there's a significant amount of work that needs to happen at the pool, and it's a more than a chore, it's quite the effort that our parks guys have to go through to make sure that that pool opens each and every year. It's a lot of work, and I'm not exaggerating when I say that, given the fact that the condition of the pool, recently we purchased a new vacuum, for the pool. I mean, the age of the pool is so old to where the pool's designed probably in the mid to late 80s. The plugs at the pool aren't even compatible, so we're having to buy adapters just for the vacuum cleaner to work. So there's a significant amount of work that needs to happen at the pool. So.
One note on that. I believe there is a cap where we can't spend it any less than down $103,000, so I presume we're going to have an ordinance to take that down. I see $55,000 will substantially reduce that well below that 103 level, so we're going to have to change that. I always like the youth council to make those decisions, but I don't think we have enough members right now.
Mr. Bruce has been trying his hardest to pull a quorum together on a monthly basis, sometimes twice a month. He sends out messages to the kids in the community to try to get them involved, and certainly we can play as a city a much bigger role in trying our efforts by way of our social media. I mean, I'm not sure how many kids are on the City of Bisbee's Facebook page, but maybe their parents can prod them into joining the youth council, but Mr. Ruth, he's worked very hard in trying to get a quorum, but that has been one of the biggest challenges, as I understand, for a number of years now.
So I've always felt it's very important to have that youth council staffed. It was staffed some years ago, televised as well. We had it in the old camera system. We could actually see people. But it's important for the young people to make a decision that affects their constituency, especially the young people. And so I'm in a bit of a quandary, because I know we need to do this soon, probably. And so it would be nice if that could be staffed and they would look at this and hopefully approve it before council then does the ultimate authority and approves that $55,000. I think that's really important. Ms. Bowman?
The $55,000 is put in here in budgeted here in case you choose to go that route. Like, you know, with all of your grants, the money's only there if it is there. So if the funding, you're going to see when we go to the next page a list of capital projects that we've recommended. This project is in there. So you can choose to either look at the youth fund as a resource. The reason we did that is because we're using so much, we've budgeted so much of the reserve, or you can make the decision to transfer that from the general fund, or you can make the decision to spend that from the capital improvement funds. And those are all limited funds, you know, that you have, but you have a couple options. We put it there in case that's the decision council decides.
And this certainly, Andy, you have something to say, and this certainly doesn't. It's a drop in the bucket for all of the needs associated with the pool. However, and you can come on up.
Yeah. I want to let you all know that Caroline Gonzalez and Lucci Giacomino and myself did youth council for almost 5 years. And we have not had a quorum now for 3 years. We just can't get six kids who can spend an hour a month with us, let alone getting those six kids to show up and do the fundraisers that they had to do. So as our population diminishes at the high school and in the city, it's just the kids that have been willing. I took over youth council because I agree with the mayor. This teaches these kids. It's a lesson in civics. They sit up in your chairs, and they operate just like mayor and council. But mayor, if anybody has a solution to this, because it's right, we've had kids. We get kids signed up, we just never get them to the meetings. And getting those kids here, they're tired, and they just don't want to come on Fridays, and it's been nearly impossible to get kids. We've been to the churches, we've been to the schools, we've been to the middle school, because we could get them a little younger. We just can't get kids motivated to be part of government. It's really been an issue for us.
Councilmember Klein.
I asked the previous mayor to be appointed to that committee. I'm with the kids every day, and I wasn't, but I would be willing to serve on it because we've got some really great kids at the high school. And like I said, I'm with them every day, and I see which ones are the go-getters and the active ones, and I think we could bring it back.
Ms. Nudy, would you want to make a comment? I'm going to allow that.
Just quickly, I would suggest once again that you look at perhaps the officers at the school president, vice president, perhaps making this a mandatory part of their office, that they be part of this council. Again, you could check with the Boy Scouts to see if they would have a representative that would come. And then there's always the honors program. It is pointed out, it's a perfect opportunity for them to be part of government. And I was really glad to hear you were checking with the middle school too. The earlier we can get them involved, the greater the chance that they'll stay involved. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Chief
Chief Achave.
I was just going to suggest we've recently started up our Explorer program with the police department, and we do have a group of highly motivated young people who show up at the police station twice a month to participate in those meetings. And I think there would be some excellent candidates there. And I'll reach out to Officer Gardner to make this available to him. And I really think we could get two or three very good members for the Youth Council out of that.
Thank you. Mr. Tom Klimak?
This is nothing more than just a suggestion. I've thrown it out a couple places, and it hasn't seemed to have gone anywhere, so I thought maybe I'd mention it here. You know, that DMV building that's sitting on the corner of Houghton, you know, sometimes I wonder, like in the schools, and Councilwoman Klein could probably explain this better to me, but in the schools, do we have an entrepreneurial program where kids can learn how to run businesses, where we could actually have it as part of the youth group here, youth council, where they're actually running a business that could serve the community in some way? I'm just throwing it out. And
we do have an FBLA club, but it's just not real active right. This year has been a tough year.
Okay.
But that's something that we could certainly look at.
I think it'd be just so great if the kids could have a job. They could actually make some money. You know, you don't want to create a whole lot of competition within the competition we have on Arizona Street, but Arizona Street's so beautiful. I mean, people just marvel at that street. And that building is sitting there, and it's been sitting for a long time. I believe it went up to auction by ADOT about a year and a half ago, and I think the starting bid was like $76,000. But the way state agencies work today, if we could say, hey, that building's in our community, is that a possibility for any kind of donation? I'm just throwing that out.
I will say this from the past. Lauren Roberts, Carolyn Gonzalez, Luigi Giacomino, I'm probably leaving somebody out. It became important to this council to have that staffed those seats filled, and they filled those seats up extremely rapidly, like in maybe a period of 2 months or so. They had it filled with a waiting list. So I do want to pay tribute to those three individuals, and I'm probably leaving somebody out, but it can be done. It takes a little bit of effort, and those three individuals at that time did a tremendous job, and they were always here when those councils went on. And at that time, they went on about 12:30 because they only did a half a day on Monday. And so it was also live television. The council thought that was important for them with a paid cameraman, and so we always did that. And then we aired it again after the council session. So we was trying to, I believe the council's intent was to elevate them up, that government can have an effect. And I remember one time there was a decision they had to make, a $10,000 decision they had to make, and they were, we have to make that decision? And I was talking to the president of the chairman of the youth council, and I said, welcome to government. Mm-hmm. It's a tough decision, but it's your constituencies. And they went ahead and voted, I believe, unanimously for that $10,000 allocation to a certain project. So it can be a lot of fun, so it would be nice to see that staffed again. It's refreshing. Ms. Blackford, come on. Yeah. Thank you. I guess we can move on.
Okay. That sounds good. Let's drop down to Bisbee Bus. Well, last year we budgeted $319,650. This year we're proposing the slight increase, $320,350. The revenue side and total expenses, $319,650 for last year. This year, $320,350. So I want to let you all know that Ms. Carbajal has worked is working and is currently having the RF request for proposal reviewed by representatives from ADOT. She also sent it over to the county attorney for review because the contract with CCS is expiring in September, I believe, and so we certainly want to have a new contractor in place once the contract itself expires. All right. Last slide, capital improvements. Last year, we budgeted $831,000 on the revenue side of 2015 and 2016. We're proposing $1,361,000 for 2016. And as you can see, you know, the transfer of some streets, use of reserves, transfer from Queen Mine, and transfer from Youth Fund to potentially account for any work, much needed work with the pool. And down below, and Councilwoman Sullivan, you'd asked about a list of projects. It's more of a starting point, if you will, of capital projects that, if funds were available or are available, we'd like to perhaps undertake at the appropriate time. So last year we budgeted $831,000. This year we're proposing $1,361,000. And well, that's it. That's the last slide, and so we certainly are open.
I just have a few comments, one comment, really. We have a serious problem with heating and cooling here at the City Hall, and I don't know the solution to that. I see the price tag over here, $400,000, but this is a lot of stress, a lot of discomfort for the people that are overseeing and directing city government. I don't know the solution to it. But we need to find something. I don't know what to do.
One of the things that a number of employees have come to me and asked, I mean, admittedly, sometimes it's excruciating in here. And so have asked, hey, look, can we entertain the idea of, you know, potentially until we can get to have something done, is you know, can we one day a week, you know, close City Hall? Because I don't know if there are health issues associated with people sitting in heat for extended periods of time. I would dare say that they are, not knowing what the physical ailments of our employees, and I certainly am not going to come out and ask. It can be excruciating in City Hall. Got a firsthand taste of that last summer, and so it's very tough for some of our employees. But again, employees that are here in this building endure it, go through it, and we have, you know, the small air conditioning units that council approved us to purchase on last year, and so it does help. So, but you know, just something that was thrown out.
Correct me if I'm mistaken. It seems to me that the clerk's office and perhaps the finance department, the clerk's office in particular, doesn't really have any windows. And so I was discussing this with somebody, I can't remember, Mr. Heratic, and he was explaining to me it's going to be difficult to cool that particular place because there's no window, primarily. But it is a serious concern, and I appreciate your sympathies toward that, Mr. Johnson. I don't have a solution for it, but we need to find one somehow. It makes me sad, actually. It really does. Council Member Dowdy.
You can't work when you're real warm or real cold, especially when you're real cold, because you can't type with gloves on. I've tried it.
I have fingerless gloves. I actually use them.
Okay. That would be my first priority, is the heating and cooling in City Hall for the Capitol, because it's just impossible to work in a cold office or an overheated office. It's just not good for the employees at all. I've tried it before, and I know what they go through. Fortunately, I didn't have to work in those conditions very long, and I don't want them to either. It's just not comfortable at all. And that would be my number one priority for capital.
Thank you.
That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Council Member Sullivan.
The $400,000, where is that number coming from? It seems awfully high.
We actually,
Mr. Heratic will definitely have some answers.
We'll let Andy. We've been doing this for 2 years.
We have chased this ball around the court for over a year. This building, there is no infrastructure existing in this building for heating and cooling. The problem is that there's no ductwork anywhere already, and nothing exists. This 4 winters ago, this system failed and flooded the entire building. That's where these split packs came from. So the council chambers were taken off of the system first. The entire system has now failed. There's not a workable water line or power line from the old system, Councilman, that comes into this building. So we really have to start from scratch. So we're taking a 100-year-old, 80-year-old building
that has no crawl space between the floors. And we're trying to come up with a system, the least expensive system that we can, to heat and cool the building. And what we finally came up with, and by the way, I want you to know, the Director of Public Works and myself three times went over to Fort Huachuca and talked to their engineers, and we talked to different engineering companies. And what we've come up with is that there are now these split packs that you see. When these were put in, each split pack needed its own unit. Well, now there's a system. It's not much bigger than the desk that the city clerk is sitting at, and that can run 6 to 8 units. Those would be placed out back. Meanwhile, all that plumbing, all that electrical has to come from the back of the building. It all has to come up to the front of this building. And there's three floors on the building. And that's part of the reason for that high expense. There's a lot of square footage here that has to be heated and cooled. When we looked at the system, we decided, okay, well, let's if we buy the split pack, if we buy the condenser units, we don't have to put one of these in every office because every office wasn't full. But at some point, we have to be ready to fill those or take them off or, you know, whatever it is, however this building changes or adjusts over time. And since we looked at this bid, we've actually added, we brought Public Works over here, and we brought the collections part of wastewater. They're now down in the basement. So we're filling this building with offices to try and consolidate our other properties and get everything in here. So it's just, this is a big building. And we went, like I said, we went through state contracting. We took three different options, and this was, believe it or not, the least expensive of the three options. Putting in ductwork was even more expensive because now you have to create metal ductwork. You can no longer use that flex ductwork on long runs. It's just, you just have a big building. The building's bigger than it looks, and there's a lot of little individual offices in the building. If it were a gymnasium and it were all one floor, we'd put in 10 or 15 units and be done with it. But every office has to have its own source of heating and cooling. And I know it is high. It was a high price, but we have chased this thing for 2 years. I've been going out to bid and looking, using state contracting to try and figure out how we could come up with the money to do this. So it's, yeah.
Yeah, there's another aspect.
Yeah.
Mr. Tom Klimak now.
Thank you. Yeah, the other aspect to it is that there's, up front, we've got a significant capital investment, okay? But when you look at the particular units that we're looking at in terms of efficiency, over the long run, when you do your cost life cycle comparison with the other processes, it's really a lot cheaper in the long run. When you look at over 20 years. So, yeah, that's a stunning cost up front, but you get it back over time.
One other quick question about the building. I know a few years ago, there was some concern about the basement having mold and water coming in, et cetera, et cetera. I don't go down there very often for that particular reason. What is that status? Is that somewhat resolved right now?
I certainly wouldn't say it's resolved. Last year we did have flooding in the basement yet again. There were some areas that had mold in the corners. It was remediated, you know, cleaned up, and so it wasn't allowed to sit and grow, so it was addressed. But quite frankly, my own education, I mean, as the monsoon season comes, it's going to be an issue again. There's I think it's called a sump pump in the basement. The wiring on the sump pump is frayed. You know, and so, I mean, there are a significant number of issues associated with the building and that HVAC system and the basement. I have significant concerns about it. And Tom and I, we talked about, hey, look, you know, well, does it help to pave a significant portion on the surface around the building? Will that help? Yeah, potentially, but it also depends on where is that water running from, and it's probably hitting bedrock and hitting the bottom of the building. So doing some type of exterior channeling, whatever concrete or whatever the case, may not even address the issue. And so I know Mr. Klimak has worked for a number of years trying to address that particular issue, and how do we do that? I don't know. So we certainly try our best to keep employees from down there. Now, granted, our collection guys are in the basement as it stands right now, and there's also a conference room down there. Now, in the event that it does flood again, they won't be down there because we certainly don't want to have them down there, and as well as if the location where the DOC workers are housed while they're here at City Hall is downstairs. Our wood shop is downstairs. So we just adjust on the fly whenever necessary.
Council Member Dowdy?
Can we use the same method for the library? Get some heating and cooling in the library to save the books. Can we use the same method that we're using here? Yeah? Okay. Good.
Councilmember Connors.
Thank you, Mayor. I just asked Mr. Bruce. Central School just finished excavating the front of their, you know, digging down to quarters and I think maybe even beyond, putting in a French drain. And just the one side of the building was, Mr. Bruce said it was about $60,000 for that work to get it, you know, get the water away. Because they were experiencing the same thing. So, yeah, you know, we can do anything, you know, but
it's only money.
It's all money.
It's only money.
Takes that green.
Let's go. Ms. Blackford, did you want to come up and have a comment?
We'll take them. I appreciate that. Certainly, we can look into that. I know Johnson. We don't have back and forth or call to public, but I just want to let the council know. Last year, Ms. Carball put together a package to Freeport to apply for grant funds. Last year, we applied for new turnouts for the fire department. I felt as though that was a high priority item. Unfortunately, you know, it was Freeport's decision that they wanted to fund the pool, so LEAP was awarded, you know, $25,000 for the pool. And so we can certainly put together another package and hopefully apply for grant funds at the appropriate time.
I think we're going to be moving into other areas, but just one final comment on the subject matter. The buildings that we have, and I know it's a serious funding problem that we really don't have the funding, but this is the symbol of what and who we are, is our buildings. And so we'll figure it out. We'll do it somehow. And I appreciate Ms. Newty and Ms. Blackford's comment of citizens' participation and helping the city solve dilemmas that we're in. And once again, sometimes with the community, there is a disconnect. It's like the government and we're over here. But really, it's the same thing. The government is the people. And sometimes psychologically, residents might not think that. It's that building over there and we're over here. But it's together. The government is the people of the community. And so I would certainly encourage ideas and thoughts even more so of how we can solve these various dilemmas we're in. I'm done. We are, Mr. Johnson, we're going to go into another branch of this public hearing, another part of it. Before we go there, perhaps without objection from the council, we might have a 10-minute recess. Do you think that's appropriate?
Too long?
No.
Okay.
We have a 10-minute recess. We'll be back. Meeting back to order. I guess we'll proceed. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mayor. At this point in time, we've gone through, kind of walked you all through, and the public that's here, walked you all through the budget. And so at this point in time, we would like direction from you all as it relates to what you want us to do going forward, any changes, adjustments that you all would like to see that you all can agree upon. We'd love to have some feedback and input. Ms. Bono, she put together a budget reduction adjustment spreadsheet, note-taking purposes, just some things that we've already discussed that you'd like to see, In the middle section, you'll see revenue cost considerations. One of the things that we haven't talked about, the staff at two staff meetings ago, had all the department heads go back to your respective departments and identify fee schedules that we may can look at and adjust and perhaps realize more revenue. Those are just, these are just ideas and things that have been considered. Development and implement fire department reserve program, develop and implement fire department volunteer program, develop IGAs with other governmental agencies to increase interfacility costs. Again, something that's been said, talk to the owner from Subway to try to realize some opportunities there. So at this point in time, we just need direction from you all as it relates to what you want to see.
Well, I guess that we can just go down the list. The first one we have is community development. Proposal, I presume, from the IBISB committee in regards to tourism with a $10,000 increase. I think that certainly we'll solicit other comments from council members. A $10,000 increase in that, I think, is in this incredibly tight budget, is not necessary at this time. That's my belief. Any other comments? Councilmember Klein.
Go ahead. I would tend to agree with you on that. Not that it wouldn't be well spent, but given the fact that, we're asking or maybe asking employees for furlough days, and then to just, frivolously spend something on, tourism when the Chamber of Commerce, can work on tourism, and certainly our visitor center does a great job. Alona does a great job up there, and we get a lot of free publicity out there. I'd like to see us not increase that $10,000 at this time.
Councilmember Connors, did you have a comment?
Thank you, Mayor. Ms. Bono, if that was to increase, would that money come from the tax, the bed tax?
I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson is saying no. Is this function promoting overnight stay? Destination Bisbee. I don't know if destination is a word, but...
Okay. No, okay. You're right. It was the money. It was to put some money aside in the event for more feasibility study or something of that nature. That's right. Okay.
Councilmember Dowdy, first. She had her finger up first.
I agree with Councilmember Klein. If we're asking the employees to make a sacrifice, I don't feel that we should give somebody, businesses $10,000 when we don't know what they're going to be doing with it. It says feasibility study, but we don't know what kind of feasibility they're looking at. But I am not for giving. I think that we need to give it to our employees. They come first. They do a good job for us, and they work hard, and we need to support them. I'm not for this $10,000.
Councilmember Hansen?
I would just like to point out that this is not really an increase in the budget from last year. That $10,000 was in the budget last year. If for some reason it was not put in for this year, we just want to continue it. And IBISB is more than giving money to private industry or whatever. I don't know why everyone is assuming that this money is going to be just frivolously spent. This is in case there's an opportunity that comes about for economic development that would help bring in revenue. And as Ms. Blackford said, you have to spend money to make money.
Councilmember Sullivan.
Thank you, Mayor. Echoing somewhat of what Ms. Hansen said, I believe that the money was mentioned by Mr. Dunn to be set aside for economic development, not necessarily another feasibility study, which I myself don't necessarily support. I do think that that tends to be a bit of a waste of money, especially depending on who we're paying to do the feasibility study. I would much rather see any feasibility studies be done somehow in-house, somebody in Bisbee providing it. If we're going to pay somebody, let's pay our city staff or something to do a feasibility study. We know our city better than anyone else, I would say. But I do support keeping money in the community development fund because it seems like more and more that fund is getting cut back. And I think that community development is very, very, very important, especially with the decline that we're seeing in our population. We need to do things and think ahead for community development. I think we need to spend a little bit of money. I'm not sure where that money needs to go to, but it's good to have it there just in case for community development, not necessarily tourism development, but community development. And so I support having money in the community development fund and not necessarily earmarking it for feasibility or tourism, but for community development. Thank you.
Well, I hope that gives staff some guidance. It looks like it's about 3-3 up here, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, one of the things that I wanted to point out has been brought to my attention by Ms. Bonner earlier today. We received an email from Becky Lopez with CBiz, and she informed us that we'll actually realize about a little bit more than $5,000 savings on our health insurance, $5 additional by transitioning to United Healthcare through our insurance premium. So we'll have some extra money in that particular area. I know, you know, as we talk about, you know, feasibility studies and setting funds aside, many communities there involved in IEDC, International Economic Development Council, and so I know in my last community we sent, it was very beneficial for us, we sent a representative of the city to the International Shopping Centers Conference, if you will, and you set up a booth and you actually sell yourself to said local, well, companies, industry, hey, this is Bisbee, here's what we have to offer, hey, what programs, what are availability properties, you know, what are your demographic profiles, and you're actually in front of folks that are making decisions, your site selection folks. I mean, just an idea, just an example of ways in which economic development funds can be used. So, but I won't say it's necessarily a direction, if you will, but if that number had to be reduced by 5,000, so to speak, I guess a compromise, we did realize some additional savings in the healthcare benefit transition.
Well, let me ask how staff. The indications are up here about three members in favor of that and three members are against that. And so if you're looking at that to put this in the tentative budget, how do you do that? Do you do it or you do not?
Well, you know, if we put it in a budget, realistically, because there is, you know, no clear direction, if the money is in the budget before anything is done, any of these funds are used, we can come back to council and say, hey, look, here's an opportunity that presented itself. What say you? To give us direction because of the sensitivity of this particular item. And if you all as a body collectively feel as though it's a benefit to the community as a whole from an economic development standpoint, and we can make a compelling enough case and it's something that can be realized, then maybe at that point in time a decision can be made.
I think Councilmember Klein, go ahead.
I just have a question. Ms. Bono, we had 2,000 budgeted in 2014, mm-hmm. and then we spent a little over 1,300.
We're talking about
in community development for tourism and economic development.
Okay, the reason that was a budget packet decision. Last year we came to you with a bunch of budget packet decisions that department heads had requested. This year we only received one, and that was from our police department because they're requesting new vehicles. Because of the situation that we are $600,000 in the hole, those weren't even considered. It wasn't really realistic. We had work sessions, and that item was voted on, not officially, but direction was given to staff to put $10,000 in for a study. If you remember, if you think back. And that's what that was. So once that study was completed, they only spent $8,000 out of the $10,000. I removed it from the budget because those were one-time budget items. And then that's how come this hands in that was reduced. It had served its purpose, and we had moved to the next. So there is another, $5,000. The compromise would be, we have the $5,000 additional savings. So, we can allocate that to this, and, it's halfway between council, and if they spend it, they do. And if you don't, you don't. So...
Councilmember Klein, once again.
And that was my point, that we had only, previously budgeted $2,000, then we have a special project, and we're going back to the original $2,000.
Correct.
So, I don't know, I'm okay with the original
$2,000
that we've had budgeted, previously, because we don't have any special projects on the horizon.
Councilmember Sullivan.
Thank you. Just wanted to point out that Mr. Dunn isn't able to be here tonight for family reasons, but he made his stance on this very clear yesterday, and had he been able to be here, it wouldn't be a tied vote, I think. And he is excused, and had we voted last night, as he was insisting, the vote would have gone a little differently.
Yeah, it's not a final decision. During this process, there will be another opportunity. As former Mayor Porter would say, we'll have another bite out of this apple later, probably.
I would like to bring forward the tentative budget tomorrow. That would be a quick meeting. If all the changes and all the direction that is given to us tonight, we can bring forth and just accept it at that point. Or we can bring it forward on the 19th. But I would like to, I have to bring it back because we have to have final figures for you guys to accept. Right now it's the proposed budget. It's not the tentative budget. So usually we would work all this out before it went tentative, and then at that point we'll have a public hearing the same night, which is not mandated, but I guess it's always been held to give the public opportunity to voice to the council, once again, those that missed that opportunity, and then we would move forward as a tentative budget to go to be adopted as the adopted budget in June. So I guess what I'm saying is we usually get this worked out tonight, and I bring back hard numbers the next day.
Just one final thought on that $10,000. When we are potentially going to be asking the citizens of the community to possibly sacrifice, when we're looking at a situation here at City Hall where the employees of the city are somewhat suffering, especially in the summer months while they're doing their work, I just can't support that $10,000 in the compromise. I like to compromise. Politics is the art of compromise. But on this one, I can't. So that's just my viewpoint. And
that's usually when I speak.
Councilmember Connors, right.
Classically, when I point, counterpoint. Mayor Early, thank you very much. I can't help but think that what you stated is absolutely true. But we are both trying to manage what little money we have, at the same time trying to increase and encourage people that aren't here to be here. So I don't know if I do myself a disservice by being able to separate those two issues completely, because we are managing what we don't have with what we do have. Money and assets, and we're trying to look towards whatever kind of future is out there for us. So I'm not saying that these decisions or a decision isn't difficult for me. Everything these days is difficult for me, virtually, except for breathing, but I smoke, so I'm working on that. You know, and that's another thing, is it's hard. I would love to express my feelings every time I open my mouth up here and tell people how I feel. But I can't, because I have to separate things, and I have to make decisions. And not everybody is going to be happy. So, you know, these are difficult things that we're doing here, and to think that we do them willy-nilly, or we don't care about certain people in this community is just it's insulting. To think that we don't care, that we don't think about everybody, because we do, and we're the ones up here having to make these decisions. So, it's apples and oranges, Mayor. The hardship that everybody is feeling in this town, and the need for us to continue to try to push this rock up this hill, as Sisyphus has done. It is 3-3, and Doug Dunn would have made it a little more, you know, you would have more definitive direction, but here we are. It's not an easy thing to do, but I, you know, like Ms. Hansen and Ms. Sullivan, I have to keep trying to encourage people to come to this town as well, so we can hire all of these people back, so we can build the tax base and hire these people back. So, definitely in favor of keeping some money. I'll compromise. You know, if it was 2, we're asking for 10. You know, make it 7,500, and we still have to agree, a majority of us, on how it's spent. You know, I think we need to increase it and have a compromise on how it's spent. You know, and if you wanna have a say in how it's spent, that's fine. You know, I'm not against that. To make it go away and not have the opportunity to jump on something is we remiss. You know, you talk about it'd be nice if somebody opened an Alco store and you could get ice cream and coffee and some popcorn and stuff. Somebody has to pay for all that stuff. You know, somebody has to, you know, do their due diligence and want to invest in that. You know, it'd be nice to have that stuff at work, but if the numbers aren't there from feasibility studies or people that just know business who walk in and look at things, you know, today, especially, you know, if you're going to be spending a lot of money, people don't, you know, unless you're Howard Buffett or Warren Buffett, you know, people don't have that kind of esprit de corps, you know. They have to have a business plan and a feasibility study, and here are the numbers, and this is the data on what's going to work, but this is how quickly we're going to go broke selling, you know, furniture on Main Street in Bisbee, you know. I mean, the people that take a chance on Main Street in Bisbee are taking a chance. They're taking a chance. They're not asking. They are asking for some supplemental help. But they're already taking the chance. They've already invested their money. They're already, you know, doing it. And they're asking to have some money set aside, not necessarily spent, but just there in case something comes up. Now, nobody moves to this town to make a killing. You know, we live here and we make a living. We don't make killings in this town, except for the mining company. So I don't think it's too much to ask that we continue to promote this town and even harder than we have in the past, and try to develop something, turn this the birth rate around. And this is how we do it, by spending a little money to make a little money. Thanks. Sorry for talking so long. I'm sorry.
Councilmember Sullivan.
Thanks, Mayor. To my point of keeping some money in the community development fund specifically for economic development, and I said, you know, I don't know what that money could be used for, but I thought about it a little more, and there's a lot that it could be used for, really. Of course, we need money for everything, but it takes money to make money. It takes that investment, and if we don't start investing with a business mind in our future, we're going to just continue to see what we're seeing now, which is this decrease in our reserves, our revenue, as the pensions go up and our expenses keep getting higher. During our strategic planning session, we talked about how are we going to develop our economy, how are we going to increase revenue. One of the ideas that we thought of was to do a city store. You know, there's services that aren't being provided within our community that we talked about, and hey, why don't we as a city start providing those? I'd like to see $200,000 in community development. We can open our city store, start creating money, and I'm not talking about putting money towards tourism. I'm talking about what do our local residents need here that they won't have to go to Sierra Vista and buy. And we all agreed that that was a good idea and something that we should look towards. Well, if we all agree that that was a good idea, that we need to invest in those kind of ideas that are going to generate revenue. And so I'm just saying that that's a community development project, just one idea. I'm not saying that that has to be the idea, but we really have to invest in our future as a business, as a city that is a business. And so I really do think that we need to continue to think deeply about developing our economy and what investment that could take. Thank you.
Councilmember Klein.
Well, you know, I had forgot about the city store, and I still think that's a great idea. And Mr. Connors, you know, you gave a great push for a compromise. And I thought, you're right, it is about compromise and let's trying to make things work, and so I thought, okay, well, you know, 10,000, maybe we compromise and put only 5 in there, which would be the savings from, but not 7, but the 5 that we will realize the savings on the insurance, and that could be set aside just for that. But then when you started talking about, well, you know, we're not a business incubator, I mean, we're really not, but the chamber should promote businesses. I mean, that's kind of their job. It's really not the city's job, but I'm still willing to compromise that savings that we would have.
It's $7,500?
No. Mm-hmm. The 5,000. The 5,000 that we would be saving.
About 7.
68.
You know, 5,000 that we know we're saving.
Come
we're
on.
Actual, you know, actual savings. And that, I mean, at least there would be something. I mean, for Pete's sake, we only had $2,000 in there before, and we really never used it except for this one project. So $5,000 is probably more than we would need.
Mr. Johnson, you might want to give Ms. Becky Lopez a call tomorrow and said she helped work a compromise out.
I'll
Mayor appreciates that. I think the staff has guidance on that.
I'm taking notes.
$7,500.
Maybe then.
Oh, Councilmember Dowdy.
Maybe that would help relieve the worries that some of the people have, some of the employees have about the furloughs too. Maybe if this is less, then you know that would relieve their minds. Since some of them think that they're losing their jobs, I think you explained that a bit today too. But you know, it's still in the back of their minds, and when you mention furlough, you know that they have this great big story that they think it's going to be forever, and it's hard. It's really tough. So some of them can't afford to be off. That's my story, and I'm sticking to
it.
Yes,
ma'am. Thank you.
Councilmember Hansen?
I just want to say it was wonderful watching this compromise come about. And I knew you guys had it in you. And I think that your idea, Mr. Johnson, about promoting ourselves, having somebody go to these forums or whatever and promoting ourselves. I really like that idea.
Actually, it's already happening.
Is it?
Yeah. Destination Bisbee. They were in Phoenix at a big expo up there with the Bisbee booth.
Shows you what I know.
Yeah. No, it's already happening at some degree. Front. So it's nice to have support from the city, though. You know, it is overt support from the city.
Shall you go down the list, or shall I go down the list?
I'll leave it to you.
All right, we'll go down the list then. Next, Mayor and Council International Luncheon. And that concerns the Border Mayor's Conference, and I know my predecessor created that, and I did attend one of those. There's only been one since there was one the first day I was in office, and it was just not possible for me to attend that one, but I did attend one about a month or so ago. I think it was informative, but a lot of the information is available in the public domain, and my feelings were it was not touching issues that I thought were human issues. I'm not criticizing. I think Mayor Mueller and Sierra Vista put on a fantastic show. It was magnificent, fairly well attended, not only by various staff members from various communities, but also it was in the police auditorium. It was a magnificent auditorium with a lot of seats. And so, but my feeling was that I brought up an issue of what the minimum wage was in Mexico, which it was, there's four different regions, and the northern region obviously was the one that I was interested in, and it is $5.60 a day. And so if I had not brought that up, that type of issue would have not been talked about. So it wasn't on the agenda, but I manipulated a way to squeeze it in the agenda, sort of. It was only attended by three mayors from the United States and one mayor from Mexico, Cananea, Mr. Francisco Tarazón. So I'm not sure of the relevancy of it, since it's not, in my opinion, not necessarily talking about human issues. And when I focus on human issues, I think of the people that really can't speak for themselves, and those are the people making $5.60 a day. And so when they talked about trade and tourism and all of these things, I never heard mention of mass amounts of people that are underneath the radar of almost survivability, in my opinion. So I'm not sure of the importance of it. It'll save about $1,000. So we have some views on the council on that. Councilmember Sullivan.
Thanks, Mayor. I also attended one of the border mayors, the first one that you didn't make it to, in AP, and it was truly breathtaking. It was an experience that I will have for the rest of my life. The way that we were treated, like royalty almost, with such respect, and the spread that they put out for us, and more than anything, the feeling of amistad that was there, of friendship and this higher effort to come together and go beyond this border was just really amazing. So I do hope that we can continue to participate in this friendship, and it may not be doing a lot right now, but I feel that if we continue the partnership, it could grow into something really wonderful that could change some of the things that you brought up. And if we host the luncheon or whatever it is, and we can set the agenda and have things like you mentioned on there that are of the human need. So I think that we're in a really special position being on the border, and there is a lot of opportunity for economic development through trade and through legislation, really, that we can actually affect as a group of people that live right here in Zone Zero. I think it's important to hold on to that and not let it go.
I can appreciate those comments. Just a few other items that I brought up that really wasn't on the agenda. There's an Asian infrastructure bank that many of the countries of the world have signed on. One of the projects is a high-speed rail service from Asia all the way to Spain. That train will run probably 275, 300 miles an hour. Many, many of the countries of the world have signed on to that. So I was proposing a possibility of an Arizona-Sonora infrastructure bank funded by government. The bank will be funded by government for infrastructure projects. And so I was thinking of possibly, once again, high-speed rail service from perhaps Phoenix to Mexico City. And to entice Mayor Ortega and Douglas, I said we'd try to work a train stop in Douglas on that. I was joking, of course. So if the council feels this is necessary, I will attend the one in Cananea, which is in probably about the middle of June. But I think it's an obligation. We just can't go to the other places. I don't know if Bisbee's hosted one. Does anyone here on the council know that?
Yeah,
we did host one?
Yeah, we hosted one at the golf course.
Okay.
The Mayor Man?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, some of us weren't privy to that.
Well, I'm kind of new up here, so I'm not aware of that. Mayor Mueller. Councilmember Dowdy, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Okay, that's all right. Mayor Mueller did suggest that since Bisbee is somewhat centrally located, that maybe we should have some of them here more than what we would normally have, and he intimated to me that they would help us out as far as perhaps the funding sources on that. But we have to participate. If we're going to continue this, we need to participate as far as funding and setting this process up. We just can't go here and there all the time. So after Cananea, I would think it's probably our turn. So I would certainly take a great deal of interest in that. I do find it interesting if we can change the agenda around a little bit of border environmental issues, infrastructural development between the two countries, kind of a small version of the North American Development Bank, perhaps, and especially about the human situation of $5.60 a day, essentially slave labor. So if the council would want to continue with this, I have no objection. I just threw it out as a possible savings. Councilmember Klein.
So since we're compromising here, I think if we hosted here, we could, you know, we have some great resources that, you know, maybe we can just reduce it by 500 and keep 500 in there so we could, you know, maybe fund a luncheon or something like that.
Well, I can appreciate that, and I guess I would be on board with that. But the show that Mayor Mueller put on was, I'm sure now we're Prieta as well. Yeah. I don't know if 500 can cover that. That's. I think if we're going to do it, we got to do it. If we're not going to do it, let's not do it. So,
I agree.
I'm pretty much at to what my view or my acceptance or rejection of this is pretty much dependent on what the council thinks. Other comments?
I think we should continue with it. I think it's a vital interest to the community and being a border town. I haven't had the opportunity to go. I wasn't able to go to the last one. And I would really like to see what goes on with it. And we need to foster that relationship for more than one reason.
I think the guidance is, Councilmember Sullivan.
Oh, one quick thing. Beyond just the expense of renting a facility and paying for the food, one of the other possible expenses is translation, because several of the Mexican attendees don't actually speak English. So.
I will say that the Mr. Jorge Espejes, I'm saying the last name right, he had his interpreters up. And I believe it was Cochise College had the machines for the English-Spanish interpretations. I didn't have to use one because most of the presentations were done in Spanish, excuse me, in English. And I do understand Spanish somewhat anyway. But I think Cochise College covers that. I'm sure if there was expense in that or not. My thoughts are there probably wasn't. But we can do that. I would expect, I asked Mayor Mueller, I said, I didn't see a lot of people from the public there. There were some. A lot of different governmental organizations were there. And so what I would like, if we're going to do it here in Bisbee, is to invite the public. That's why I'm thinking of a big place where a lot of people could come. I think it's important for the public to see, hear, think, even participate perhaps in a conference like that. I think it's very important so we have an understanding of what's going on with our neighbors and our neighbors knowing what's going on here. So I guess staff has guidance in that.
Yes, sir.
One other, since we're talking about mayor and council, I do want to contribute the best I can. And so I will ask the finance office to, beginning in the new fiscal year, July 1st, deduct 10% of what my salary is. You can write that down and just knock off 10% of it. That's what I want to do. Not much, but a little bit. Next, we will go to salary and benefits, furlough staff 80. And Mr. Johnson, the furlough staff 80 means all the employees of the city. I presume that's what that means?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So I guess we have to discuss. My thoughts are, as much as possible, I think it should be voluntary, but I don't know what the participation of that would be. We are $600,000 below. We have to somehow try to reduce that, tapping into the reserve fund. We are $600,000 tapping into the reserve fund in the city. Ladies and gentlemen, this is for public consumption. In three more budgets or two more budgets, there will be nothing left in the reserve fund. It will be all gone. And we have around, correct me if I'm mistaken, Ms. Buono, around $2 million in the reserve fund. This would, is that?
We're not quite there because right now we're $300,000. So let me look real quick.
Okay.
At that, we actually have a 1.6, just about 1.7
million. As of right now, that's because of the projection of the lower sales tax revenue, is that correct?
Right, it's because we're already running in the red, $327,000.
I understand. And so, two more budgets. If we continue down this path, ladies and gentlemen, there'll be nothing left in the reserve fund. Would that be a correct assumption?
Yes, that is a correct assumption.
Okay. And so either we begin to deal with it like right now, this year, this budget year, or, in my opinion, we take an easy way out and just pass it on to next year. But eventually there'll be nothing left. And then the city, in my opinion, will be in severe crisis. Now, I would like to do a voluntary furlough. We're in a situation where this council cannot offer things to the employees of the city, essentially, and we're going to have to ask of them to, in a sense, safeguard their future, in a sense. So let's have some comments on these various different furlough propositions that are out. Councilmember Hansen?
I don't like the idea of reducing the pay for the folks that are making less than 45K a year. To me, that is a really big sacrifice for those people. So I if we have to do a furlough, I would like to see the 80-40. And also, I would like to thank you, Mr. Mayor, for having 10% of your salary going back to the city. And I had thought about this last night, and I wanted to do half of mine. I'm going to cut it by half. It's not much. I don't make as much as the mayor does. But maybe that, you know, will make some difference. I apologize. I cannot talk because of allergies, so I'm having difficulty here. So if we have to do the furlough, I'd like to see the second option.
Thank you.
Any other comments from the council on this? Let's talk about the 80-40 furlough, and let's explain it to the council and also to the people here, but also the public, sort of what that entails.
So, Mayor and Council, the 80-40 split, employees essentially that make above $45,000 will be asked to essentially take 10 furlough days, and employees making less than $45,000, take 5 furlough days. In conjunction with that, I know some of my department heads have already said, hey, look, you know, in addition to those 80 hours, here and there, we'll donate a day or two or what have you. I talked to a couple of our employees in the streets department, and they too said, hey, look, you know, we can absorb
that five days. And so realistically, my recommendation, again, sharing the same sentiment, would be for us to look at that 80-40 split, which essentially will give us a savings of about $112,583. In addition to any additional voluntary furlough time, and it was brought to my attention that many of the employees within our organization during hunting and fishing season will take time off with pay. even some of the kids don't go to school, which caught me by surprise too, during that time of year. So to be quite frank, I think a blended model, so to speak, of that 80-40 split plus any additional voluntary days, realistically, I think it'll get us there.
Yeah,
I think it'll get us there.
I'm on board for the 80-40 split. I actually think that there'll be more voluntary days given. Maybe it'll get to the point where we'll have to say no more furloughs. but the 80-40 split, I'm on board with that. Any other comments from the council? Council Member Klein.
Mr. Connors first.
Let's go to Mr. Connors first.
Thank you, Mayor. Sharon, is that are those salary cap, are those loaded, those numbers? Those, or is that,
What do you mean by loaded?
With the insurance and the
benefits.
There's no fixed cost in those numbers.
No, those numbers, it's 45,000 or above, 40,
That's pure
salary.
That's
just salary.
And we actually lowered it. We were first looking at 50, but not all of your department heads make 50,000. So we.
But everybody has benefits, though. Everybody has.
Well, yeah, we have full benefits. But what I'm saying is Mr. Johnson had expressed to me that he felt it was important that all department heads participate in this furlough. So if we would have put the number at 50,000, there would have been a couple of department heads that wouldn't have been required to participate because they don't make $50,000. So we took another look at the number, and 45 seemed to be a feasible number that included all of department heads.
But those benefits, even though they're not liquid money, those do cost. Those can be considered part of how much that person is. Is that considered part of their salary, contributions?
No, because everybody would have been over that, because just with the cost of the insurance, we looked at straight salary. The reduction, the dollar amount that you're actually seeing there includes the taxes that we would have paid, because that's a savings to us, because if we didn't pay them, we wouldn't pay the Medicare and Social Security. So those are included, but not the fixed. We didn't look at the complete benefit packets. What we looked at was what their salary was as of June 30th, July 1, didn't count any kind of increase that they have, because that's how we have to budget it. So those numbers do not include the benefit package.
Being somebody in the private sector, and I hear, people talk to me about working for a municipality or, federal government or whomever. But those are something that they're receiving at no cost to them.
Yes.
So, at the end of the year, after I add up all of the money that I earned, and then I deduct all of the costs to my life, including insurance. I mean, that's what I'm left with. That's how much money I make in a year. So, it's a cost, and it's a cost to us, the city, the benefit part, and it's hard for people to not understand that is not considered. Or how employees that receive that benefit can consciously or conscientiously say that that's not part of their salary. I mean, it isn't technically, it's money, but it's things that isn't paid for. So this is just a long way around to the $45,000. I mean, that's a very conservative number that you're using, even though you said maybe it was why we qualified at a 40 grand is so that the department heads could participate. But we pay a lot more money than just salaries for each individual person in the city.
Absolutely.
A lot more money than just their salaries. So.
Absolutely. The way we were looking at this is those are fixed costs. We were looking for savings.
I know.
So we're not, we can't, it would just take us back to the 80. Because everybody, if you counted in the full benefit package, everybody's over 45. So
yes.
We were looking for cost savings, and that doesn't change our expenses. So we still have to pay for the insurance for all employees, regardless of what they make. So that's the perspective that we were coming at. We were looking how to reduce the costs onto the reserve fund by pulling reserves out. It's, you know, we're not going to save anything on benefits other
well,
than
I understand okay. that, but you know, I need to we all pander to the people that we like and that talk to us and they have our ear. You know, people ask me, they make a salary and they are paid benefits. And it's like, yeah, and that's how you encourage people to work for municipalities and things. So they're not completely, it's not a stretch for somebody in the private, private world to think that, that is part of that's a pretty good deal.
A lot of companies also, the school district I worked at, it's always printed on your pay stub the value of your benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So you understand the cost.
Do you know what the mean income in Cochise County is? I'm going with, 40, that's a number that you picked, and it's not just an arbitrary number. You guys have been thinking about this. $45,000. That's a pretty good paycheck in Bisbee, Arizona, in Cochise County. It's a lot more than I made last year, but I do what I do because I'm selfish. So everybody's, this isn't easy and this isn't fun, and it's tough to make these decisions, 40, 80, 80%, compulsory, volunteer. We have to make a decision. And you want us to give us a number tonight so that you can come back tomorrow with us off, tentative budget. So,
I think if it's a pleasure of mayor and council to say, hey, look, 80-40 split is a good idea, a good number to move forward with. What I'd like to do is have the employee council come together and actually talk to the employees about that 80-40 split and get an idea, get a pulse from the employees. Hey, look, how many of you all are interested in donating an extra day? Kind of that blended model that we were talking about, asking the department heads, hey, is there, over the next 3-4 days, hey, give me a commitment. How many days? Look at your calendars, look at your schedules, look at your vacations, look at everything and tell me, hey, give me an extra day. And I think as we move forward, I think it's extra icing if we commit to that 80-40 split with that $45,000, threshold, because once we go below that, we start to we're impacting folks. Obviously, and so, but I think giving us an opportunity to pull the employees together, kind of an all hands on conversation with the employees, and explain what this looks like, so there's no confusion, there's no hearsay, as we heard today, about what that number actually looks like, what's the impact, and then, again, throwing out, hey, look, here's a blended model. How many of you all would be willing to donate an extra day voluntarily? And the same thing for 7 department heads. Who's willing? I really do believe that if that is the pleasure of mayor and council to go with that 80-40 split, I'm confident. I'm not betting. I'm confident that we can come up with a number that may be. It may not be the 157, but we might get halfway. So.
And I would like to interject, please, that this is not going to reduce the number in the budget right now. I'm not going to bring it back and reduce it by 112. The budget will go forward with the $599,000. So what we're looking for is how to minimize the impact to the reserve, and this is the program. So it's not going to change the number that you adopt. What it's going to do is to give you a comfort level that this is what we're trying to do to reduce the cost. We can revisit all of these issues once the employee council meets and they come back together and Mr. Johnson brings it forward on how we're going to manage it. When do you want to look at it again? Maybe, you know, we can figure out how many days you want to do and then in December look at it again and then make a decision to go further, to either stop the furloughs if things are wonderful or continue them. So that's really the reason that we're asking that. That's not going to change the number I bring forward, but it's going to tell us how to manage it for the year, and then we'll look at it again.
Before we go to Councilmember Sullivan, let's just clarify that a little bit. So let's say we do that 80-40 just as a number of the $112,000 thing, $112,000 reduction on the 80-40 furlough. We would see the result at the end of the year. There'd be $112,000 or in that ballpark. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't be spent. Mm-hmm. That's how that works.
Right.
Okay. Councilmember Sullivan. Yes.
Thank you. You know, I'm just looking at all of this, and it would be great to have that extra $112,000 in the reserves at the end of the year. And I'm in support of that, of the 80-40 furlough. However, it still isn't going to solve our bigger problem here. We're in a huge boatload of trouble, and I think that's not being stressed quite enough. I think we need to do something more drastic because, for one, we're looking at this budget here in the capital improvements, and we're scheduled to transfer $965,000 from our reserves for the 2016 budget to cover a new AC unit, a city hall elevator, which we need. But what good is that going to do us if city hall is closed in 3 to 4 years? That money needs to be invested in some way to create revenue. Or another option is, if we're going to be doing furlough, what if we look at just closing city hall during the hottest month of the year and the coldest month of the year, or for 2 weeks during that time, because then we could save on all the utilities as well. I know this sounds drastic, but I'm just looking at the situation as the reality that it is, that this is only going to get worse and worse each year, and we have to do more than $112,000 of reduction in our reserves, or increase to our reserves.
Councilmember, did you want to respond to that, Ms. Blum?
Yeah, I'd just like to speak to the capital improvements. This is a budget. We're not scheduled to actually make these transfers. What this is this is giving you a list of what we think we need to do, what needs to be done. And if you look at it, everything that was scheduled last year wasn't done. If you look at the year-to-date estimate, zero. So we didn't do any of these projects, for one reason or another. Queen Mine always budgets in their capital plan, but until the lease is resolved with Freeport, he does not spend that money. So we're not right. automatically going right. to do right. any of this stuff
right.
without.
I just feel like even the budgeting of it from our reserves, when our reserves are already so low, budgeting $700K. Over the previous budget, when we know we're $600,000 over budget already, it just, to me, doesn't make sense.
Right.
But I do get what you're saying.
What'll happen is they'll transfer the money in. We would have to transfer the money in because there's not $900,000 in our Fund 99 or capital projects. That money has to come from other places if we were to do all of these
right.
things. So, you know, at this point, what happens is the public works director and the city manager gets together on these and they set the priority. What, you know, the pool, obviously it's the pool, and we have to come up with the Mule Gulch drainage. some of these other things that are streets, if they qualify, you know, we could transfer from the streets funds. But those are all things that are a little, that's just a, the management of it. Mm-hmm. There are, I really understand your concern about, you know, this is only a very, very small part. And you're absolutely correct. But we have to do something. Your highest costs are in your personnel costs. And technically, you know, we should have $1.5 million just in reserves for 3 months of operating. As far as closing City Hall for 2 weeks, we have statutory requirements that we have to do. And, you know, to stagger staff because we have to meet payroll or, you know, do things so we're not fined because we didn't, you know, file the taxes on time or the retirement on time or, you know, that's kind of hard to manage.
One thing I also want to remind you all of is the settlement agreement that we discussed at some point with Freeport. We need to bring that up at some point over in the near future because I really would like to get that off our plates. If I'm not mistaken, I believe it was, what, $100,000 that was offered, roughly. I can't remember the exact number, but, you know, let's go ahead and have that conversation with Freeport and really talk about, you know, the settlement agreement that's been on the table. The other piece of this is, you know, as we go through whatever the tentative budget is that you all can agree to, I think over the course of the year, like I said, I'm going to bring some ideas, some options that if you all approve, once in coordination and collaboration with the department heads to really, you know, not necessarily only get buy-in, but also to have, you know, a great deal of input, and if it's implemented and adopted by you all as a body, then I think over the course of the year, you'll start to see, as an example, on our expenditure, 78.0%. You know, lapsed budget, and this is how much we've expended. Expenditures of budget, 78%. You know, we'll start to see that number decrease, and so over time, you start to realize those savings. So, quite frankly, I mean, this is, you know, the first part of the conversation, and I do recognize that it isn't a significant amount, comparatively speaking. I mean, it's a big dollar amount, but and we have quite a ways to go. But I think over the course of the year, we can do some pretty drastic things and steps that have to be taken. But I think this conversation, quite frankly, is direction for us. And all those sitting in this room and those listening can appreciate and respect the fact that we're getting direction from council that, hey, Steph, we need to come with some realistic ideas to the table. And that's what, quite frankly, we're all committed to doing.
Well, we've been here for a couple of hours. We've got it down to 490 or so. Maybe another hour or two, we'll get it down another 100 grand.
Tonight?
I'm joking. Councilmember Klein had some comments.
Well, you know, the fact that we even have to bring up furloughs with our employees is tough. And you know, I just wish we didn't have to go this route. And if we have to, I think the blended model you talked about is probably a little bit better because those making under, you know, the 45, you know, some of them may be able to, you know, add an extra day because they don't have dependents at home, you know, and their mortgage is paid and things like that. But then you have some of these other younger families that they may not be able to. So that's something that the employee council will have to discuss with them. But, I mean, I think I do like the blended model a little bit better. But I do have a question because you're looking at 80-40. And so we can, you know, count the firefighters in that 40 because they don't make very much money.
Well, they are in there.
Okay, but that's what I'm... No, what I'm saying okay. is if you ask them for two shifts, that's 48 hours.
What we did is the calculation of the dollar amount. Their firefighter shifts are 56, the Kelly, the 56. So when we calculated this number, we calculated on the 56-hour work week for them is like the 40-hour work week for us. So we calculated in 112 hours because their rates are different. So my point to that is they are included in this furlough, all employees, with the exception of the enterprise funds that we went over, and that's how we based it. So we're asking them for the same amount of time, 10 work days, or 5, depending on where they fall, 80, 40. Some of the firefighters, some of your longer term, your higher up, they make more than 45 when it was calculated out. So a couple of them will be included. So that's in there. So we'll take another look at those numbers when we actually do it. But we didn't ask our firefighters for any more time than their normal work week, which is 56 hours.
Okay, and I do understand that they're included. So then you're asking them for 56 hours rather
because
than...
Because they're paid 40? For more. They're paid for 3,100 hours a year.
As opposed to the 2080.
The 2080. It's a crazy thing, and I'll have Chief Ernest come up and explain it, but the way that their pay is calculated is because they work 24-hour shifts.
I have a question, and perhaps Chief Ernest can help explain it a little bit. I think we are down to, would you want to come up? Because sometimes I may get numbers mixed up a little bit. I believe we have 17 employees right now, 18 with the chief. Furlough days. This is public safety. It's about fire. It's about ambulance. Would this pose a dilemma for you, Chief?
Well, I think to be able to do it, there's going to have to be, if someone's off, well, there's a staffing thing, you know. I mean, if there's 5 people on duty and we have a person off, you almost have to have a person to replace. We'll have to look at the logistics of this. Because, you know, if we have, say, for example, 6 people scheduled for that day, then one could be off, though you would have another person on call to cover that day off, the person that's off. But our minimum staffing is 5 people. And average is, you know, sometimes it's 6, depending on vacations and stuff like that. So it would be, we'd have to figure out a way to do that. But it would have to be when there's 6 people scheduled to work. So it would be a scheduling logistical problem, you know, to figure it out. That's you know.
Saving money is a good thing, but saving lives is much more important. So I would want to make sure that particular department can respond as quickly as you all do right now and effectively.
And that's a major
concern of mine.
Yeah, if we can somehow help with the situation, we all want to be able to do that. It's just we'll just have to figure out a way to you know, because minimum staffing, you have all the rules and laws you have to comply with as far as staffing for fires and ambulance. So it'll be a little more difficult than regular employee. And I'm sure we'll talk about that further.
Councilmember Klein?
And that, I guess, could also go for the police department as well. If there is somebody that is taking a furlough day or whatever, or we may have one from fire department and one from the police department, and we have... a big emergency. Are they going to, you know, are they going to be expected to come in and, you know, work without, you know, if they're on, have to respond?
Absolutely not. You know, it's we've had a, you know, couple busy months, and as long as the goal is met by the end of the year, then that's what we're looking for. So if the furlough, it's not going to be a requirement. We're going to have to work all out the details on who is furloughed and when and who makes the call. And, you know, not everybody can go hunting for 2 weeks. Both, you know, there goes our fire department and our police department. You know, so it will be managed. And even with the 16-hour overtime limit that we have with the police department, if there is a need, they call it. You know, we had that homicide. You know, it's the chief's call on all of that. We just needed to be fair and equitable. So in other words, just at the end, if he had an officer that took 5 days, but the other one only has to take 3, you know, we need to keep all of that in mind, because morale, it's going to be tough enough anyway, but we're going to have to rely on our department heads to do that, especially when it comes to public safety. I mean, you never know when there's an emergency and all hands on deck, so.
Any other questions or comments from the council? Council Member Dowdy.
They have a whole year to take.
Yes.
And you know, we'll talk about the plan on that. He has some ideas, but
And you're right.
They're not going to all be gone at the same time. It's a day here and a day there.
That's exactly right. And I've asked, and I'm going to ask department heads to be extra judicious as it relates to employees having to take, or when they take, you know, that particular day off. Obviously, you look at your scheduling and projects associated with your respective department, but you obviously need to have a degree of flexibility. You know, call it a mental health day, or whatever the case may be. But if employees have the opportunity to, all right, if I know the number of hours that I need this month, I think I want to split it between two pay periods. I want to take, you know, a half a day. I'll take 4 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, this day, this pay period, mm-hmm. and next pay period, I'll take another 4, or whatever. However you work it out, it's up, as long as we get to the number. And as it relates, you know, to your point about, you know, public safety, making sure we provide, you know, set services, you know, this too is another reason to make sure that, you know, the relationships that we develop with neighboring jurisdictions. One, I'm going to bring it back, is the automatic aid agreement. You know, when we have situations and instances, if it's a furlough day or not, you know, again, developing those relationships. And I keep, you know, bringing it up, but, you know, the chief has been, I mean, he's really hit the ground running as it relates to developing a relationship with Cochise County Sheriff's Department. And so whenever there is an incident, he absolutely reaches out, and the sheriff has said, hey, look, whatever you all need, I'm there. And so I think all of us collectively within our respective departments, and I know there have been instances where Andy may have needed to call the county for something street-related or wastewater-related, we'll reach out to Sierra Vista for guidance and input into port, and they've been willing to do so. So I really do think that while it is very tough across the board, us being proactive and forward-thinking as it relates to ways in which to help, I hate to say it, fill the gaps, that's what we need to do. And so, again, you know, we're throwing out ideas, but I'd absolutely, you know, the recommendation to go to that 80-40 split with the blended model, reaching out to employees and saying, hey, look, you know, over the next week or so, I really want you to think about it. Are you all willing, who's willing to donate an extra day? And quite frankly, I think department heads, myself, are here. You know, this is what we're doing. We're throwing our name in the hat. And so we eat costs all the time, even on your department heads. And, you know, whether it's driving our own personal vehicles, not paying for our own gas, you know, not signing up for said registrations and certifications through our professional organizations. You know, I've delayed another year in my credential manager certification. So there are ways. I don't take the city vehicle when I go places. And there's a cost associated. I pay for the mileage and maintenance and tires and brakes on my vehicle. So, and everybody across the board, actually, she does the same thing. She eats that cost. And so when we talk about employees having skin in the game, we're doing it. We're already doing it, and we will continue to do so. We have our direction from mayor and council, and we absolutely want every employee within this organization to know that the folks making decisions and providing support and guidance and leadership, there is skin in the game as well. So,
thank you. Any other comments from council? It appears to me, correct me if I'm mistaken, that we're pretty much all on board on the 80-40 furlough.
Okay. Thank you.
I think that's where we're at. We'll move to the next item on here, and it is the Mind Mixer. I believe that Councilmember Sullivan, you want to talk about
sure,
that?
Sure, I can talk about that.
Sure.
What Mind Mixer is, and there's other companies that offer this, I recommend that we look to find the best one. It is an internet-based platform for two-way community engagement, and why I feel that is important is because it provides basically a way for people to respond to city business that's not necessarily right here at Call to the Public. which is a really great thing, but it would be nice to have another outlet for people and also a way to group ideas and help with tough decisions. If we're not sure how to go on something and we kind of know something's coming up, we can throw it out to the public and have them weigh in on it with a survey and sort of get an idea for what they're thinking. Because a lot of times, you know, we get really strong advocates up here for one direction or the other at Call the Public, and that's not representing a very large amount of people most of the time. This has the capacity to reach a lot more people with less effort. I know with MindMixer it is monitored by the company so that they keep any kind of quarreling and that kind of thing out. It doesn't turn into a big social media blasphemy thing. It stays on topic and progressive, where we're looking for new ideas and ways to improve together the people that disobey or that act up on it. They can just be excluded from the conversation. It's also a way for staff to give their input. You can have different sections and logins, so if you're a staff member, you can get on and put your ideas on there or weigh in on how you feel about the furlough or about anything, really. It's another way for staff to engage, and they can do it anonymously or they can do it publicly, and that way maybe they might not feel comfortable talking to their department head about an issue they're having or budget stuff or whatever, but they can still express themselves. It's also a way for notifications of events to be put out there in addition to our regular website. Any openings that we have within the city or on commissions can be advertised, and also volunteer opportunities, and just a way for the public to also give their ideas and their input. I think it's really important. There's a lot that can come out of many heads on one idea instead of just the people up here or just the paid staff, especially with the tough times that we're facing. There's a lot of smart people here, and they might feel more willing to step up and do their part or get involved if they had a more professional way to do it. And I think that Facebook just isn't the right way to have these political discussions that are going on. I think it would be really great to progressively meet these needs. And this is kind of a newer thing that's happening across the country, but it has been really beneficial in a lot of towns and cities for bringing a community together and coming up with good ideas and solutions. So I recommend it.
Thank you. Councilmember Klein.
I think in light of the tough decision that we just made, I think this is really, at this point in time, probably a waste of money. These things tend to become a social media type thing. You know, I mean, that's the way Facebook started and some of these other things. And, we have a website, so why would we want to, double up what it is that we're putting on our website? And as far as employees, being able to come, and make suggestions, there's such a thing as a suggestion box that we can put on the table, and nobody has to see when an employee comes in and drops that in there, and, it would be checked, daily, like, mm-hmm. Like the mail is or whatever. And so the employees could still make their feelings known anonymously. Mm-hmm. But I think at this time, I don't know, I would just have a really hard time, spending another $2,500 when we're asking mm-hmm. employees to give up part of their pay.
Thank you. Let us refer to the city manager, Mr. Johnson, on this subject matter.
Sure. Councilmember Sullivan, if to accomplish your goal in really opening up the lines of communications and providing the public with an opportunity to have more input in a different, like you said, a different platform and call to the public, Ms. Coronado, she brought to my attention I completely forgot about this, that Civic, our newly designed website, which we're still working on, it, she brought to my attention that we actually have a module. It's called a community connection, which, as you very eloquently described, a mind mixer, quite frankly, does something very, very similar. And so we have that module available, and I will ask if it's the pleasure of this body to give us an opportunity to, maybe if not our next council meeting, maybe the one after, to really walk you all through our community connection section on our website, and perhaps it may accomplish the goal that you're looking for. And if it doesn't, we'll certainly revisit. But I'm pretty confident that it may accomplish the goal that you're looking for, as it relates to community engagement. I know that's something that you're, that's one of your key initiatives, and you've done a heck of a job so far. So, and maybe this is a way in which we can accomplish that particular goal. And it has a very similar look and feel, to a point as Mind Mixer. It's obviously it's a different platform because it is through Civic Plus, the company that redesigned the city website. But give us a chance to present to you and the council and to the public exactly what that is. And so if it is something that you'd like to see, hey, look, let's put the word out. And actually, yeah, she showed me today, and it's actually pretty solid. It's pretty solid. So.
Any other comments from the council? It seems to me probably the consensus is let's see how the city website functions in that regard.
Community connection.
Do you think that's a consensus of the council? I think so. Okay. The next section is revenue cost considerations, and I'm going to let the city manager and or the city finance director go through this particular section.
As I stated previously, in speaking with all of our department heads, having them go back and look at all the fees associated with the respective departments, many have come back with ideas. And what if it's okay for you all, I'd love to present sort of a menu of options at the first meeting in June. Proposed fee schedule changes is one example is. City clerk's office, we don't charge anything for our liquor licenses. As it relates to fire inspections, we don't charge anything for fire inspections. There's a cost associated with those services, and so we're not realizing a cost savings. I won't necessarily say we're giving away. I'll just say it's great value to the receiver. And so we'd love to bring that before you all as a point of consideration. Many of the costs associated that we'll be proposing are increases. It's a cost of doing business, and so we'd love to bring that before you at a future meeting. And so the list won't be so robust to where it's mind blowing, but again, we're where we are. The second item, the next two items that we have here, develop and implement fire department reserve program and develop and implement fire department volunteer program. As we've talked about before, building that reserve program, quite frankly, is a very important piece to the overall success to our fire department, our organization, because, the need is so great, and the service that the fire department provides to the folks in our community is so great that we really want to make sure that we do everything that we can to fill the gaps. And if it's looking at the utilization of reserve fire, there are many models across the state that we would love to bring before you in conjunction and talking to Chief. And as he mentioned during his annual report conversation, and that's something that we've discussed at length. And so now we're at a point, okay, we've talked about it enough, let's go ahead and move forward. And he and I have talked about it, we've agreed, hey, let's go ahead and figure this thing out and move forward. As we posted a position on our website for part-time. And that's really the way in which we foresee trying to build up our reserve force in the event that someone leaves and we have a vacancy, or we can backfill with those reserve officers. And the other piece is, as we go through our recruitment process, We hire firefighters that have the firefighter 1 and 2, but some of them may not be paramedics. So do we work more aggressively? You know, Cindy Moss, our personnel director, is an excellent recruiter. So do we start our hiring process by, you know, focusing on those paramedics, getting folks that are, that already have that certification, so we're not in our training budget having to expend, you know, those funds sending everybody to school and they're coming in with those certifications, but, you know, getting everybody on the same level playing field. I think we've done things a certain way for a very long time. Now it's time for, you know, for us to take that step, as the chief has done himself, as it relates to his what is your program that with the youth,
the Explorer
program. Yeah, you know, it's a starting point. What was mentioned tonight, you know, the reserve program that the sheriff's office has implemented. You know what? Let's go ahead and put the metal to the, to, you know, put it to the floor, and let's go ahead and move forward and start developing those reserve programs so that we can fill in the gaps of those vacancies. We have a for the most part a reliable resource. You know, when we look at on the fire side, you know, if we are looking at volunteers, hey, who are some officers that, I mean, firefighters that may have retired from our department that, you know what, they still want to be connected and tied. You know, can we reach out to them? And I don't know the answer to that, but we won't know the answer until we ask the question and start doing the homework, let work, and start putting some things together. Develop IGAs with other governmental agencies to increase, interfacility costs. One of the things that was said at the town hall meeting we attended in Old Bisbee with Councilmember Connors and Sullivan, we recognized that there was a gap as it relates to our detective. And so what's happened, and Chief, he pushed it forward, and so he's assigned an officer. He assigned an officer to Cochise County Sheriff's Department and the Detective Division to kind of get their weight up, get the experience, get entrenched in that department. And so by way of establishing that quid pro quo relationship, hey, now we can really tap into that resource because we develop that informal intergovernmental relationship, and the county has been very good to us as it relates to offering up support in the area of investigations. And we'll do the same thing on the fire side. I know Sharon has reached out to her colleagues, and the same thing with Ashley, with her professional organizations. When we need help, we reach out, and that relationship building is very, very key as it relates to our overall and long-term success. And as it stands right now, you know, those are just some of the options, is brainstorming over the last 2 days, and obviously things that we've thought about for some time. But I wanted to take this opportunity to put it on the table because we're here now, and that's all I have.
Any more comments from the council on that?
No.
I would like to I would like to commend our city manager and also the chief for following through with that and recognizing that gap, as you mentioned, with the detective. And I'm really happy to hear that. And also, I really support the idea of the intergovernment agreements. I think that's a really great thing. So thank you.
Anybody have anything to add? Councilmember Connors?
Thank you,
yes.
Mayor. Thank you, Serena, and thank you, Chiefs, both of you guys, and my Serena Center. Really speaks volumes. I'm not enjoying this at all. However, it's very encouraging that everyone's here and everybody's building up. You know, we're all playing together, and this is so nice. This is so great. Thanks. It's nice to be part of this.
Any other Councilmember Hanson? Any other comments? I'll just close it off by saying what's.
I'm sorry, can I?
City Finance Director Sharon Buono.
I just wanted to ask Ms. Coronado, our city clerk, the only change that you've really done to the budget tonight was to increase it by $5,000 for the economic. The CC tourism budget. I do not believe that we need to meet tomorrow. I think that the the tentative budget can be introduced on Tuesday, and then we would just go from there. But I wanted to make sure with Ashley that was acceptable.
We just do a blanket public notice for this whole week, so you guys don't need the meetings, more capital.
And based on our schedule, on Monday we will come together at the council meeting. We will resubmit the budget if necessary. And in other words, I'm going to show you the change. At that point, it's not mandated, but we're going to conduct a public hearing so our public can come forward. And then that night, you would adopt the tentative budget. So
on
this
Monday
is.
Or Tuesday? You said Monday.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tuesday night. I'm sorry, I'm tired. I don't know. We could stay here each night each week. So. But I don't believe that we need to meet anymore. I think that we've got solid direction. You've made one change to the budget, and we'll go forward from there.
Councilmember Klein.
You know, I just want to comment to Mr. Connors. Please let's not have that train wreck until we get our new ambulance.
Well, actually, Councilmember Klein, it's a... it's a high-speed Japanese train, and there's not going to be anything left. It's just that's when those things have accidents, it's just dust. So, yeah, I promise.
No further comments from the council?
Before we close off, I do want to extend, and I speak for the council and the public for that matter. I want to thank Mr. Jessen Johnson, the city manager, Sharon Buono, the city finance director, and all the staff, and for that matter, the employees of the city. My sincere appreciation. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adjourn. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Sharon, thank you.